relativ Kapitrini and Bangalore.
But also receiving a presentation from the National Treasury, and members have been emailed the research documents compiled by Dr. Makalima Chubalile. Thank you. Esther, thank you for your inputs. Yes, we've got a PhD in the committee, research, doing excellent work for us. We are conducting these engagements with the metropolitan municipalities, where we started in Gauteng with those three metros. Last year we engaged with the city of Cape Town. We engaged with Nelson Mandela, Buffalo City. We will deal with late in September or early October. And today these two municipalities will do their presentations to us why. To monitor the whole aspect of good governance. That's the objective. Good governance, sound financial management, value for money, and money wisely spent, and accountability. Accountability. Why? Because we are working with taxpayers' money. But before I go further, we wish all Muslims a Eid Mubarak and extend our appreciation to our brothers and sisters for continuously sharing the festivities with the marginalized people. For those members, we wish you well in this period. Are there any apologies? No apologies received. Thank you very much. Honourable members, we immediately go to the National Treasury to do the presentation. I'm going to give you 40 minutes to the two metros. I'm going to give you each 55 minutes. We will deliberate from 12:35 until 13:30, and we will adjourn 20 minutes to 2, because there's a plenary at 14 hours in the NCOP. So that is the time frames that we will work in terms of our agenda, and we will stick to that. Treasury, could introduce your team and then you can proceed.
Okay. Good morning, honorable members. Thanks, Chairperson De Beer. My name is Jordan Maja. I'm from the National Treasury. And then with me, I'm with Sifiso Mabaso. He's also from the National Treasury. As the chairperson has indicated, we'll be dealing with two metros, which is Mangaung as well as Etegwini. I'm mainly responsible for Mangaung, and my colleague is responsible for Etegwini. So in terms of the presentation itself, what we'll be looking at the key issues related to finance as well as service delivery. With regard to finance, we'll be looking at issues related to the cash positions of these two metros. We'll be looking at the audit outcomes. We'll be looking at service delivery, especially in terms of the targets. What were the targets set, and then what was achieved? And also looking at the budgeting processes. I think honorable members will be aware that one of the key institutionalized processes that Treasury undertakes on an annual basis is the mid-year review of the budget as well as the budget benchmark. So when you do the budget benchmark, one of the key issues that you look at is whether the budget is funded, whether the budget is sustainable. So those are the issues that we'll be looking at. And then also obviously the last part, or the most important part, is the issues of the alignment of the BEP, whether the planning is talking, the figures talk to the planning. And then most importantly as well, the alignment also looking at the sector departments, so whether the departments are aligning their plans to the municipalities. Because what we believe in as far as local government is that everything happens within the municipal space. So every planning must happen within the municipal space. So those are the key issues that we'll be looking at. And then after the board overview, I'll be looking deeper into the municipality itself or the city itself, which is Mangaung. And then key issues that we look at is obviously the financial health of the institution, service delivery, the institution itself, the governance of the institution. So those are the key issues that we'll be looking at, and then my colleague will go deeper into the metro, Itikwini Metro. The first slide talks to the financial position as at end of June 2017. I hope the slides are visible. Yeah. And I know, got that copy. Thank you. If you look at what we are comparing here is the cash flow position of the institutions. Obviously, for today, we're looking at Etekwini and Mangaung from end of 15-16 up to end of 16-17, wherein we are saying that if you look at Mangaung, for instance, at the beginning of 15-16, it had a cash of 313 million. But the net increase or decrease in cash held, the net increase or decrease in cash held is the activity, the operations of the institution. So it was only able to marginally increase it by 12 million or 13 million up to 325. And then if you look at the 16-17, it opened the balance at 325, and then it was the cash operations for the year for 16-17, it was a reduction of 102 or 103, and then it ended at 223. So what in terms of the financial performance of the metros, we are saying that from where we are seated as National Treasury, it's fairly healthy, but at the same time, we want to caution that there is a decline in the cash available of the municipalities. And then at the same time, in terms of the performance of the financial performance, we are saying that on average basis, it's at 96% for both revenue and expenditure. But I think the members of the committee should also be aware that when you're talking about the financial performance, we're not necessarily talking about the cash itself. We're talking about the billing in terms of revenue. We're talking about the expenditure in terms of the both the cash and non-cash items. So we're saying that on average, the based on the budgeting of the cities, they are able to receive 96% of their operating revenue, and then they're able to spend 97%. And then we're saying that if you look at Etekwini, there was a high decrease of 600 million with regard to the cash in 2016-17. But that was based on the decision of the city to say that they are going to fund, they are going to increase their capital funding from own sources, of which we do commend as such, because you'll see when you go further detail, one of the key issues that you look at is how does the municipality survive in terms of its capital budget. Are the municipalities relying on the cash, on the grants, or are they self-sustainable? So if you look at Etekwini, there was a bold decision taken in 16-17 that we are going to increase our capital expenditure, and then we are going to fund it from own sources, which is commendable. The second portion is looking at the audit outcomes of the cities, and then we are saying that of the 8 metros, Mangaung and Cape Town regressed. If you look at Mangaung in 15-16, they had unqualified audit opinion with findings. For 16-17, it was a qualification. And then if you look at Etekwini, it's one of those cities that were stable. It got unqualified with findings for both financial years. And then most of the common matters on the, if you look at your right-hand column there, the most of the issues that have been raised by the Office of the Auditor General are issues related to material losses of water and electricity, the impairment of consumer debtors, irregular and unauthorized expenditure. We'll also look deeper into the irregular and unauthorized expenditure of the cities. And then the non-compliance with regard to SCM processes. This also leads to irregular and unauthorized expenditure, ineffective political and administrative leadership, poor management of indigenous registers, some of the billings are not reliable, and then internal controls. So those are the main issues that when you look at the audit report of the Auditor General, those are the issues that have been flagged. And then if you look at Mangaung specifically for water losses, it was at 34%, and then electricity losses, it was at almost 11%. So those are the key issues that were flagged in terms of the audit findings. The third component that we want to bring to light in terms of the audit, in terms of the committee here, is the issues of service delivery. Again, if you look at Mangaung in 15-16, and I think that's where in maybe the city should be able to indicate to us the reasons thereof. Because if you look at the target, they had 238 targets, and then they only achieved 128. And then if you look at 16 and 17, the targets were reduced from 238 to 172. And then at the same time, even though the targets were reduced, but still the performance was still, it was still low. So, and then if you look at Etekwini, the performance in terms of the targets, 144, 73% achieved, and then 110, 72% achieved. So, in terms of average, Etekwini has been stable in terms of the targets that have been achieved. But if you look at Mangaung, there has been a regress. And then one of the issues that in engaging the cities, we found out there's a misalignment between the budgeting and the planning. Contract management and project management are the key issues. Again, the issues of SEM processes. And then one of the key issues earlier on, I indicated that one of the institutionalized processes that we undertake with the cities is checking whether the budgets are realistic. And then when you look at the end of the year, that's when you are able to confirm or deny the fact that whether this budget was realistic, whether this budget was achievable. Because if you look at the spending itself, it talks to whether the budget was achievable. And then, but having said that, there are other issues that also affect the cities, which some are not in their control, like the issues of the drought, which I believe Mangaung had one of the key issues in terms of drought. That's why in terms of the engagement that we had with the city in the media, they raised the fact that due to the drought and due to the fact that the water board had increased its tariffs based on the drought. So if the water board increases the tariffs, then it affects the payment levels. So that is one of those issues that the cities is not within their control. And then the obviously in terms of the high bulk purchases of electricity and water, we find that communities are going for alternative sources of energy. And then obviously the other issue is the issues of implementation of credit control. We believe that enough is not being done at city levels to implement this credit control. I've spoken about the high bulk purchases. And then obviously the other issue that is key, and I believe maybe the committee itself, I think the committee itself is aware, maybe there's not much that is being done from where we are seated, the issues of unfunded mandates. But we'll talk more about it later on. We believe that is having a very serious impact on the cities, wherein they have to perform functions that are not related to them. And then there is also an issue of traditional land. I think Etekwini is a classical example, wherein there is every year when we meet with the city, when we do a budget benchmark, we talk about the huge developments that is happening in those rural areas. But at the same time, the city is not able to recover any revenue in those areas. What it's putting the city's finances in a bad light. At the same time, the city is supposed to deliver services. And then I think similarly to Mangaung in that regard. So I think the issue of those areas is an impediment to the city's financial progress. The other issues that we look at is what I've spoken about the budget benchmark. If you look at the slide here, we are saying that what we say as National Trust is that cities should strive to have a surplus budget, because surplus budget will give the cities an opportunity to build a reserve, a revenue base, a cash reserve, so that it can be able to fund its own operations, can most importantly be able to fund its capital projects. But at the same time, we are also saying that a surplus budget or deficit budget does not necessarily mean that the budget is not funded. That those are two issues that we always emphasize, that if you see a budget surplus or a budget deficit, does not necessarily mean that the budget is not funded. If you go back to the cash flow of the municipality, that's where you assess the funding of the budget. So here we are saying that if you look at, we were saying four metros budgeted for operating deficits. Those are Cape Town, Etekwini, Nelson Mandela, as well as Mangaung. And then, but if you look at the funding, just below the highlighted area, that's where we're looking at whether the budget is funded, whether the city will be able to match its operations. And then you'll see that of all the eight metros, Mangaung had a budget that is not funded. So this is one of the issues that we emphasize that it should not be the case. And then also equally important is the issues of cash and cash equivalents. I think what I want to show on the slide, if you look, there's a line item that says creditors to cash and investments. We are saying that the city should strive to have a budget surplus so that it can be able to fund its operations. But at the same time, you have got a situation whereby cities have got a surplus, but at the same time, they've got creditors. So if you look at the relationship between the surplus and the creditors, if you look at Joburg, 185% of creditors above the its cash reserves. So we know that it will never happen that on a particular date, all the creditors have to be paid. But at the same time, we're saying that you should be always have to strive to have enough cash to be able to afford to pay your creditors. So those are the issues that we always emphasize and we look at. And then in terms of the alignment, we'll talk a lot later on about this, because basically what we're saying, that's what I was saying earlier on, that we have got our national development plan, which must talk to the objectives of the cities. And then we are saying what is crucial here, Chairperson and honorable members, is the issues of the alignment between the sector plans, the alignment between, especially when you look at human settlement as well as transport. Those are the biggest funders, for lack of a better term, when it comes to Cape Town budgets of municipalities. So if ever you have those departments' budgets, if they are not aligned to municipal priorities, then we are not going in the right direction. So what we strive for, especially when you talk to BEP, Built Environment Project Planning, we're saying that we must make sure that over and above the other sector departments, especially human settlements as well as transport, they must make sure that their investments are congruent to what the municipalities are planning, so that we can have a better alignment. We don't have water here. It's cost containment. I believe as a treasurer official, that will be content. And then, I'm going to, Chairperson and honorable members, I'm going to look deeper into Mangaung as with your permission. Is it fine? And then, like I said earlier on, we're looking at the four key areas, which is the financial health, the institutional health, and then service delivery as well as governance. And then this one is based on both the mid-year review that you have done for last year as well as the most recent benchmark that you have done with the city. And then when you look at the financial health, we are saying the bottom line there, that we believe that the health of the cities at a fragile level, given the fact that one of the key issues is that the city does not have a long-term financial strategy. The city has got a massive consumer debtors. The city's capital budget, 85% of it is funded from grants. So which means the city cannot have its own developmental goal because it cannot use its own funds. Whatever they can do, they can only do based on what the DORA says. So we're saying that puts the financial sustainability of the city at risk. And then we're saying that one of the key issues that the city has got is the issue an entity, wherein normally cities use electricity as a way of credit control, wherein they can be able to switch off and switch on. But with Mangaung, the problem is that they've got separate accounts. The entity is sending its own account, the city is sending its account. So the city cannot use that leverage for credit control purposes. So I think that is also putting the city's cash flow position at the risk. And then one of the key issues that we have also identified last year is the issues of efficiencies, especially relating to issues of overtime, wherein you find that I think last year, mid-year, speaking under correction, that overtime was adjusted upwards by almost 80 million. By last year, the overtime was already exhausted. So if those are the kind of efficiencies that we say that is putting the city's finances at the risk. And then if you look at the budget itself, we are saying that the budget, given the fact that the budget is at a deficit, given the fact that the budget is unfunded, we are saying that the budget was not sustainable. If we're going back to the issues related to service delivery, we are saying the service delivery is in decline based on our assessment. There is a need to review the master plans, which will inform the capital investment plan. The city has acknowledged the fact that most of its master plans are old, if for lack of a better word. So they need to be reviewed. And then the city, over the past 3 years, the city has put a lot of emphasis in terms of bulk provision of infrastructure, especially for water. So we are saying that it is now time for the city to use that bulk infrastructure that is there to leverage its economic development. So we are saying that it's an opportunity for the city to leverage its economic development using the bulk infrastructure that has been put on the ground. And then also, again, like any other city, we are saying the city should be able to balance the priorities in terms of social development as well as economic development. But yet comes back to the issue again of the grants system. If ever you have got the grants will be telling you what to do. You cannot be able to balance that. So it is important for the city to have its own resources to be able to drive its own economic agenda. And then there is a need to improve on the repairs and maintenance. There is also a need for a key economic strategy on the integration zone, but this I'll talk to them later on. If you look at the institutional, we are saying that there is progress, but there is still a little bit, it's still under strain. We cannot say that we are happy in terms of the institution itself at the moment, but we acknowledge the progress that is being made. We are saying that the city is lacking capacity, especially at executive management. And then this plays an over-reliance in the office of the city manager. There is a potential risk of loss of institutional memory based on the departure of key staff. And then this situation is made worse by long-term turnaround for filling of posts. And then in terms of the government's issues, the city indicated to us during the benchmark that there is a blurring of administrative and executive functions, which we, from where we are seated, we don't believe is entirely correct, because we know that there's a role of this of the executive, there's a role of the administration. The functions cannot be blurring. So we are saying that unless if ever there is interference in the administrative duties, then you can talk about the blurring. But there are clear roles and responsibility of both the executive as well as the. One of the key findings that we had also during the budget process is that I think we honourable members who all know that by end of August every year, there is a budget process plan which details how the city is going to perform its budget. I mean, how it's going to plan its budget. But if you look at the budget plan of the city, most of the issues were done in the last 4 months of the year. So which means there was a lot of congestion in terms of the finalizing of the budget process, to an extent that the city didn't even approve its budget by the 31st of March. It had to ask for an extension. So we're saying that the congestion of the budget process led to what we believe from what we are seated that the there was lack of political oversight in that regard. And then obviously the issue of qualified audit opinion is also raised. With regard to unfunded mandates, the information that you got from the city is that the only issue is with regard to library services. And then that's wherein I think honorable members you should be able to assist the city here, where we find that if you look at the bullet number 2, we are saying that the city receives, according to the figures that you got, they got a subsidy of 2 million, and then they're only able to raise 331,000 on the service itself. However, the function itself is costing almost 110 million. So already the city is operating at a loss in this regard. And then 105 of it is encouraged. But from where we are seated as National Treasury, we are saying that the city's all the cities, not necessarily Mangaung, all the cities should strive to make sure that there's service level agreement between them and the sister department or the sister departments. And then
it was the same with Nelson Mandela municipality last week. Mm. This point.
Mm.
So Treasury must come in and address this as well.
Okay.
I'm just sensitizing you, proceed.
Okay, and then how we are addressing it, Honorable Chairperson, is that what we can do, the least we can do is to create a platform that is there for engagement between the different sectors. But ultimately, we have got different accounting officers for different departments, wherein if the service itself needs to be rendered, and it should be rendered on behalf of the sector department, then there should be a service level agreement between the two parties. And then those are the issues related to water and electricity losses. I'm trying to rush here now. Unauthorized expenditure, you can see both unauthorized, fruitless and wasteful, as well as irregular expenditures. The graph is going in the wrong direction. It shows you that these are rising, and then hence the fact that we are saying that this should be dealt. My colleague, when he does the presentation for ETEQUIN, he also indicate to what are the initiatives that are being undertaken. And then with regard to the built environment, when you look at the spatial planning and project preparation, what we are saying is that I think most of the issues that we are raising here is the what we are telling the city is that the city is selling itself short. If somebody is reading the map of the city without that particular person knowing the city itself, he cannot be able to identify what is happening in the city. So I think the bottom line with regard to the assessment of the map of the city, we're saying that the city is selling itself short. There should be a little bit of narrative in terms of what it's doing in terms of its map. But at the same time, Honorable Chairperson, we are assisting the city in making sure that we are refining its map. And then the city has got three integrated zones, but what we are saying is that we need to have targets. When are we going to finalize them? But at the same time, we are saying that the city needs to clarify which integrated zone is it looking at. And then one other issue that we are saying it is lacking, we cannot find economic data within the document. And then there's no economic strategy within the document. Those are the issues that we have identified. And then the integration part, we are saying that there is an evidence of joint planning between the public transport as well as the housing, but we are not seeing anything in terms of the implementation. The planning is there, the intention is there, but we're saying that if you can do the implementation part, we'll have progress in this regard. And then we are saying that in terms of the project pipeline, again, the narrative, there's not much on the narrative. I think the point on capital funding cannot be overemphasized enough. That, I mean, if you've got a city with a billion budget and then 86% of that is from the grants, the sustainability of the city is at risk. And then with regard to the implementation, we are saying that we've got a city support program, Chairperson, wherein we are supporting the city in terms of the project planning as well as the implementation of the ADN is the airport zone. And then again the issue of the narrative. With regard to the last point here, with regard to urban management, we are saying that the city should specify how the urban prison management is going to be done and how is it going to be carried out, and most importantly, how is the private sector going to be involved in that? Because we know that most of the inhabitants is public sector. So how are we bringing private sector on board in terms of ensuring that is done? And then we are saying that there is progress with regard to institutional arrangement again at the planning phase, but in terms of the implementation, that's where we are failing. And then this slide. I'm sorry if it's clear. Just to show you the IDP strategic objectives of the city and the allocation of the budgets, how it has been individually allocated. And then in conclusion, Chairperson, when we did our budget benchmark, we are saying that the budget assumption of the city were not realistic. We are saying that we said then that the revenue forecasts are not achievable, and then the expenditure projections are not consistent with cost containment principles. And then, even though the budget is multi-year, the problem that we had is that the fact that the city does not have a capital investment plan, and then it has got outdated master plans, then how can we then say that the capital budget is multi-year? And then, again, with regard to relevance, the IGP process that I've mentioned, that the fact that of the 10 months, most of the work was done in 4 months, it shows that the IGP process was compromised, and there was no political oversight. Public participation process has been congested, and then might not relate to community needs. And then with regard to sustainability, the huge operating deficit projected is not sustainable. The budget was not funded as well. So that's it with regard to Mangam. I hope I can get a glass of water for that.
We go straight to your presentation on Equitwini. Yeah.
Thanks, Chairperson. Again, good morning. My name is Sifiso Mabaso. I'll take you through quickly about the Equitwini matters. The following slide, Chairperson, look at the criteria in terms of the financial health, service delivery, the governance of the institution. And then when we look at the financial health of the municipality, it got a strong cash flow. This was the outcome when we assessed during the benchmarking engagement with the municipality. They have a strong cash flow position, but reserves are deteriorating. But the reason why the reserves are deteriorating is due to the implementation, the increase in the implementation of the capital budget. But the other slide will also reflect that. There's an increase in unauthorized and irregular expenditure. When you look at the municipality in the past, this area is used to be problematic. There was a huge decrease over the years in terms of this item, unauthorized and irregular expenditure. Here is only indicating the 2 years, that there's a slight increase between the 2 years, meaning the previous 2016-17 and 2015-16, hence this point, Chairperson. The budget was found to be adequately funded, meaning it can be implemented sustainably, but the social package thereof was found too high. The social package, you are referring to the the funding of the indigents. The policy provides for free electricity of 50 basics, on which the division of revenue is funding that, but the municipality is over and above that. From its own coffers, it's also funding more than the 50 kilowatts of electricity. In our case, when we assess, we were cautioning the city that if ever they go to this level, they must make it a point that the social package it kept under control, because the municipality now is funding from its own coffers. There was sufficient capacity to borrow according to the capital expenditure, but this as well is based on the past where the municipality was a bit conservative, the way it managed its finances. But now when we assess it, we find that now they still have a capacity that they can even go and borrow in order to fund the infrastructure. The water losses, as a result of illegal, there are high rate of water losses, but this is because of illegal connections and deteriorating infrastructure. But here as well, Chairperson, the municipality is already having measures in place trying to deal with these issues. But however, it's not an easy thing to deal with because of these illegal connections, people that connect from everywhere, and as well as the infrastructure. It's not it's quite an old city, Chairperson, so we'll be mindful that as much as they're dealing with these water losses, it cannot be necessarily an overnight that we'll be able to see the outcome. But the city is aware, they have already have measures and programs that they are trying to deal with this situation. The collection rate is deteriorating, although it's still above the norm. This one is due to, as well, the Ingonyama Trust, which is the municipality. This is quite a huge area in which the municipality is battling to try to deal with the areas, where the areas that are under Ingonyama Trust, the people there, they are not paying for municipal services, but the cities are expected to render a service. It is rendering the service in those areas, but people are not paying, so it's not be able to collect the money from those areas. So that affects the collection rate of the overall municipality, as well as dealing with the deceased estates and the deregistered properties. It's very difficult to collect money for municipal services from deceased estates and deregistered properties. But the city has measures. They are trying to deal with this situation, Chairperson. Electricity sales have generally declined. These are also affected by people moving from the grid of the city, meaning they are now using solar. There are quite a number of people now using solar as an alternative gas. And these are clients that are in companies that are able to pay for their services. So in that case, it does affect the revenue of the municipality. On the service delivery portion, Chairperson, there's high performance and expenditure in the special targeted areas. The municipality is trying to deal with the service delivery in that area in terms of as much as we've seen in the previous slide from my colleague when you were showing the stability in the municipality in terms of targets and the achievement of those targets. But this is not an easy area because it's a moving target. Because of inward migration, there are quite a number of people that are coming to the big cities like Etegwini as well. This affects other cities, people from rural areas, people from foreign areas that are coming to the city. Then it's putting a strain in the financial resources of the municipality. As much as the municipality is able to plan for itself, but this migration also complicates the city's finances and the city's administration, Chairperson. On the institutional part, when we evaluate the municipality, we find that now they are moving in the right direction. There's adequate capacity and a strong team. But this as well, Yeah, Chairperson, the city is the only in the country that have quite, if I my memory serves me well, that have a long-serving CFO in the country in the municipal space. So in that case, that's a positive to the municipality because it brings stability in the terms of administration in the city. And that is also reflected when you look at the audit outcome. For the past 18 years or so, the municipality has always achieving unqualified audit opinion, which is one of the rare in the municipal space, consistently achieving such. But now it comes back to management of the municipality, the stability thereof. And as well as in other areas of the department within the city, the management there is stable, that they have always been there for some time. So they are able to guide and able to realize the vision of the city because of that stability. On the governance side, Chairperson, as well, which is linked again to the institutional part of the municipality, the city is moving in a right direction. They do have an audit action plan in place. The city, they do have the integrity commission to deal with an investigation, especially in terms of handling, in terms of handling irregular expenditure, in terms of handling the implementation of the SCM regulation. These are some of the things that make the city moving in the right direction, hence the results that are showing from the audit opinion over the past 13 years, Chairperson. However, it does not mean necessarily the city doesn't have challenges. They're quite faced by huge challenges of unfunded mandates, which is the city is able to quantify. The latest figure that we have is 1.3 billion that goes to unfunded formal housing, the housing in terms of hostels. These are the areas where this unfunded mandate emanate from. Museum, the health, which is not necessarily the municipal health, libraries, and as well they were able to quantify that how much is being spent towards that area, Chairperson. However, there are engagement that we have with the city in terms of trying to assist to get the provincial department, especially the KZN provincial treasurer, to try to facilitate with the sector department there to say, please be able to work with the city, and those departments must be able to provide. If the department in the city, they have to able to sign a service level agreement, if they are not able to perform the function, but let the funding thereof that we're supposed to perform by the department go to the city and compensate the city so that the city can be able to avoid straining its own resources. Because the city as well, at the same time, is expected to even provide its own service but to its communities over and above this unfunded mandate. Another area that we touch on, Chairperson, is the regular expenditure on which the city has been able to quantify and be able to show which areas this irregular expenditure emanates from. But as at the year end, which is 2016-17, it was 514 million irregular expenditure that was quantified to that level. These are the areas where there was non-compliance with SCM, non-compliance with the SCM in terms of valid tax. There was one service provider that was had this problem. Award of tenders, entities whose directors or members or principal shareholders are family members were in the service of Etiwini municipalities. But these are the areas, Chairperson, that the municipality as well is trying to put measures in place that they are trying to mitigate or trying to resolve these areas. On the unauthorized and irregular and fruitless expenditures, this is not necessarily Etiwini only, but overall, this is what Treasury is trying to do. We had an initiative where we selected the top 10 or 20 municipalities according to the value of those irregular expenditures that were targeted to see to it what is the problem in terms of the application of the supply chain management regulations. And as well as there were training conducted to the officials together with MPAC, the Municipal Public Accounts Committee, the version in the municipality space, that they were trying to tell them what is their roles and responsibilities, even reminding them some and telling them that how do they go about to investigate these irregular expenditures and recoverability and get officials or those that are responsible of committing this transgression be able to account or pay from their own coffers. The internal audit of municipalities as well, we're trying to strengthen the workshop that were conducted by Treasury. And there were then another thing that we was introduced was the regular audit of procurement processes. must not wait up until the end of the financial year, but must be conducted as and when, monthly, quarterly, in periodic period, right throughout the year, so that you'll be able to detect in on time if ever there is transgression, and that can be able to dealt with, to be dealt with, not to wait up until the audit process. And as well as the implementation of the establishment of the Financial Misconduct Board. This is over and above what the disciplinary misconduct, disciplinary process of the municipalities. But this one specifically, look at the MFMA, transgression of the MFMA, that municipalities are expected to establish this Financial Misconduct Board, so that the matters that deal with MFMA can be focused in that area and be able to deal with and be able to finalize, so that it must not wait up until it goes through the other processes. These were the intervention or initiatives that were implemented by Treasurer, trying to deal with irregular and fruitless expenditure. But the situation, Chairperson, as is currently now, it's not an easy thing to deal with, but there are already measures in place trying to intervene in that. Perhaps the results, we might see it as time goes proceed in terms of number of years coming. This one is the planning environment of the city of Thekwini, as part of the BEP, it's part of the metros that are part of this program, the built environment planning program. The city's got quite a huge of catalytic project because of the private sector involvement in trying to expand the economy of the city. Municipalities are regarded as an engine for economic growth. So the city, this is part of its own initiative to try to expand its revenue base and be able to grow its economy, be able to deal with the unemployment, which is quite problematic currently in the country, be able to deal with all these social ills, poverty, and all that. So the city has already had this catalytic project that are dedicated, that they are doing it jointly together with the private sector, that are being invited to the municipal space. The private sector will be able to deal with their own area, but the municipality is providing infrastructure, is providing support towards that. But the private sector, of course, in the long run, they will be able to pay for municipal services, they will be able to pay for property rates, then that now it will also generate more revenue for the municipality. The city is quite and involved in this Chairperson, quite heavily so. As well as on the intergovernmental project pipeline, the KZN Treasury has shown budget and plan for the Department of Health, Transport, Education. Now there's been a bit of alignment in terms of the right direction, whereby sector departments are coming on board. The KZN Treasury is trying to assist in that situation. But however, they still have some misalignment in terms of departments, program or project, not necessarily aligned to the city's one, but at least there is some communication there, whereby now currently we can see some light towards that direction. Also on the capital funding, Chairperson, its own resources, the municipalities have undertaken borrowings and the grants. The private sector, as I said it earlier, on a Catholic project, the provincial investment, these are some of the contribution towards capital funding of the municipality. Also, the urban and precinct management. The municipality has quite projects that are trying to manage its own precinct or urban planning, land user management, so that building is controlled and is within the municipality control. People should not necessarily build out of what the municipalities or infrastructure of the municipality is able to provide. This other slide, Chairperson, is the budget in a nutshell, the operation and as well as the capital. But on the capital side, when you look at the on the far right, you can see that the growth, the municipality is implementing a 7.1 billion budget in the current financial year, which is going to steadily grow up until 7.7 in 2020 and 2021. It's quite a huge budget, the capital budget of the municipality. So it's time to deal with all those other areas, the backlogs, dealing with as well as its own economic growth, trying to balance all these competing factors. This is overall, Chairperson, what we concluded on our benchmark when we engaged with the municipality. The budget assumption that we evaluated during that time, it was credible budget. We could see where the city is going. It was a multi-year budget that the municipality has now adopted. which shows that there is growth, I mean, continuity of projects. The relevance, there was an alignment with the, between the planning planning environment together with the budget. Because in this case, if ever there is misalignment, then the budget does not talk to planning. Then we've got this disjuncture of where budget is being spent, but is not being spent in the right areas. Then we don't see improvement, or we don't the cities are not be able to meet their target. But in this case, if there's an alignment, at least it gives us comfort that we'll know that, okay, these plans will get implemented. Because it's only through the budget, which is a vehicle, and finances, that we'll be able to implement these plans. Otherwise, it always remains a plan up until get implemented through the budget. When you look at the sustainability of the municipalities, the cash flow was sustainable. We're comfortable with it when we look at it that now they can be able to implement this budget sustainably because of the strong cash flow position. They have adequate cash coverage. The municipality is able to service its, its creditors. Though the reserves are deteriorating, but this is not necessarily raising alarm, but we're just cautioning the municipality that they must look at its own reserves. But this deterioration of reserves as well, it's because of the funding of the huge capital budget that they have, the city. But this was one of the cautions to say you must try have an, to put an eye on your reserves. Should not depleted that much. The collection rate as well is high. We find it high, but despite the decline, but the decline, as I said it earlier, is caused by these other areas, especially the Ingonyama Trust areas where people are not paying, but they're consuming municipal services. The budget was sustainable over MTRF. The budget is cash back and funded. But however, we as well advise the municipality to look at the irregular expenditure part, that they must be able to keep control of that, just so that it does not go out of hand. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you to the Treasury for this analysis of the two metros. Honourable members, we also acknowledge and recognize the Chair of the FFC, Professor Blykies. Welcome. Welcome at this meeting. Very important institution playing a crucial role. Welcome to the executive mayors of the two metros and the team they brought with them. I refer you to honorable members and our honorable mayors to section 50 to 109 of the MFMA. The role and responsibility of the mayor, the municipal manager, and the CFO when it comes to the budget, expenditure, etc. And this is the law. And that's why we are meeting metros. That's why we are meeting provincial treasuries. We've done all 9 of them. To look at the fiscal position of our provinces, to look at the fiscal position of our metros. And that analysis will go to the Minister of Finance through the plenary in the NCOP to take its route. We want a healthy financial administration. We're going straight to Equitini, Mayor. Where is the mayor? Equitini. Where's the mayor? There she is. Welcome. The city where the sun rises. Yes. Where I live, the sun sets. That's in the west, Port Nolloth. Yeah. Yes. Welcome, Honourable Mayor. Please introduce your team. The CFO, having a long service in that municipality, and you can see through the analysis of the National Treasury. So thank you for the work you are doing there. The Municipal Manager, the three of you forms the Troika in terms of the MFMA. And it's not only getting briefings, it's also that municipalities can learn from each other. What is the one doing that I can learn from as the other municipality to improve on my circumstances in my metro or local municipality? You've got 55 minutes to address us. Thank you, Honourable Mayor. You can stop. Thank you.
My name is Mayor Zandile Kumete from Ethekwini Municipality. Thank you so much for the powerful presentation from the team from Mangaung and also Ethekwini. Here today I'm with my CFO, Chris Kumar.
Okay.
We have received some accolades because of hard work that he is doing within the city. And on the other side, there I'm having my city manager, Mr. Sipho Nzuza, the man who is busy perusing the document is Adrian Peters, who is the one who's going to be doing presentation on our behalf. Next to him is Mr. Mtsweli, who is from infrastructure and housing, but he's just the head. CCM is not here. We are apologizing on his behalf. He is standing here on behalf of the CCM of infrastructure. And on my left-hand side is Musa Mbele, and also who is head of city planning. Adrian is going to be leading us.
You've got 53 minutes.
Oh, okay. Good morning, Honourable Chair. We have decided that the formulation of the presentation is going to take in the order of looking at the trajectory that we are following when we actually do the long term development framework plan. And it is also looking at the interim IDPs and the IDPs for all the periods since 2000 vision. And we have actually aligned that to the strategic planning approach, which takes your global planning, your strategies, national strategy, provincial strategy, and the rest up to the municipality. But what is very important with this presentation, Chair, is that we looked at the BEP and in the BEP in trying to find where the how the special layout of the formal and informal housing is, and then we actually then try and superimpose the infrastructure that we are developing through the BEP, which is now actually attracting the economic node along those corridors. As you will see, there are corridors that are being built, C3 and up to C9, which are now attracting a lot of investment along those corridors. And exactly what happens is that we are seeing a movement, an improvement in the housing areas where people are living along those nodes. And the whole purpose for this is to try to reduce costs for the citizens of Ethekwini, but at the same time creating employment and income for those people. What Adrian is going to be taking us through is that once we have done that that planning, we then align that planning with the budget that is going to be used for the year. Chair, if I can then maybe hand over to Adrian.
Thank you, City Manager. Thank you, Chair and committee members. So we're going to follow the format that was covered in the letter. The City of Ethekwini does have a vision, and its vision is up on the slide, and it really talks to the aspiration of being Africa's most caring and livable city. That vision was developed in the 2000s, and through the Imagine Durban process, a long-term development framework was prepared, and since then we've had successive IDPs developed over the years. more recent IDPs, we've been looking very carefully at the issue of alignment, the need to align globally, the need to align nationally, as well as provincially. So you'll see globally we've looked at the new urban agenda, the sustainable development goals, the Sendai framework for disaster risk reduction, the African Union agenda, as well as the Paris Agreement, and we've looked at how that needs to be taken on board in our IDP. We've also looked at the national strategy, the NDP, the various addresses that are made, including the State of the Nation addresses. Provincially, we've looked at the provincial growth and development strategy, as well as the State of the Province address, etc. And we've translated that then into our municipal strategy. You can see we've got various initiatives that are informing our IDP, as well as our SDF. The important point on the slide, it was covered by the Treasury, National Treasury colleagues, is that in terms of the recent agreement between COCT and National Treasury, the Built Environment Performance Plan, which is the BEP, is in fact your medium-term expenditure framework of the SDF. So we're looking at the SDF, strategies. You can see how the SFAs, the strategic focus areas in the IDP, are then used to inform the spatial development framework strategies. So we've got six strategic focus areas in our IDP, which I'll come to later, and each of those we've looked at which part of the spatial development strategy those strategic focus areas inform. You can see that the spatial elements of our SDF, our primary corridor, the urban network strategy, how we deal with marginalized areas, how we deal with strategic infrastructure projects, the SIPs, and of course how we deal with urban management. We've made sure that our IDP, our SDF, and our BEP, and later on I'll show you in our budgets, that there's a degree of alignment between all of these things. So what we did is we said, well, here we are, we have a vision, how do we make the vision happen? And in the journey to moving from a vision to action plans, we've had to look at what are the hard choices that we need to make, what are the development principles, and coming out of that, we identified six strategic focus areas, which are shown in the bottom of the slide. Around creating sustainable livelihoods, a socially cohesive city, a financially sustainable city, creating a safer city, promoting an accessible city, and an environmentally sustainable city. So there are six strategic focus areas, and I'll show you later how that maps back to our action plans, but those are the six strategic focus areas that drive our strategy. We've also looked specifically at the new urban agenda and what the new urban agenda is asking us to do. So on the top of the table running horizontally, the first row, you'll see our six strategic focus areas. And you can, and on the left-hand side in the column running from top to bottom, you'll see the focal areas of the new urban agenda. And we've made sure that those focal areas are mapped back to our strategic focus areas as shown in that particular table. The same with the rest of the global agenda. So if you're looking at the Climate Change Agreement, the Paris Agreement, or the Sendai Framework, which is on disaster risk management, the African Union Agenda, as well as the Sustainable Development Goals, each of those things have been mapped back to our six strategic focus areas as shown on the slide. Again, the African Union agenda, we've unpacked that in terms of what the African Union agenda is specifically asking us to focus on, which is shown in the first column. And again, we've mapped that back to the six strategic focus areas, which are shown on the first row across the top of the table. The NDP, we did likewise with the NDP. We looked at what the NDP was putting forward as being strategic initiatives, and we've mapped that back again to our six strategic focus areas. The provincial growth and development strategy, the same. We did the same. We also took the provincial growth and development strategy and we mapped that back to the SDGs. the Sustainable Development Goals, and we identified the individual projects that are in the city's budget that are part of our catalytic projects, but they're responding to the SFA in the PGDS, the strategic focus area in the PGDS, as well as each of the Sustainable Development Goals. So here you'll see, for example, that Dubai Trade Port or Keystone Logistics Hub is a response to SFA 1 in the Provincial Growth and Development Strategy, but it also responds to Sustainable Development Goal 1.
Some of these members were there. I'm just taking you back to our oversight.
Thank you. Okay. Our local government manifesto, it's important that we look at the local government manifesto, and again, we looked at what the manifesto is telling us on the left-hand side, and we've mapped that back to our six strategic focus areas. What we then did was we said, well, it's not good enough to just map back all these priorities to your strategic focus areas. These strategic focus areas have to be translated into action. And so on the right-hand side, you'll see our eight-point plan. So each of our six SFAs is mapped back to the eight plans that we've got in the IDP. You'll see two of the SFAs, or the socially cohesive city, has got two plans. And you've also got the environmentally sustainable city having two plans. So now we've moved from mapping focus areas to plans. And I'll show you later how the plans then are mapped to budgets, which means that the plans then get implemented. So here we start to see the relationship between budgets and plans.
Important.
Yes?
The budget and your plan is integrated. Crucial.
Right. So we are a city that believes in continuous improvement. So this is our first assessment at the budgets that are allocated to each of the eight-point plan. But what we're doing moving forward is making sure that alignment is informed more by us looking specifically and making the choices that we want to make around how the budgets are allocated. We also have implemented processes around how projects are screened to make sure that the projects that we put forward under the programs, under the plans, are in fact projects that have got the most impact. So we're looking at a program management approach to improve this as we move along. Again, we show you how the budgets are mapped to, in this particular slide. And so if it does become necessary for us at a reporting level to look at how we are responding to the NDP goals, so you'll see in the second column we've mapped the NDP goals, and we can now tell you how much of the budget we're spending in each of our financial years against the NDP goal, which is mapped back to our eight-point plan. This particular slide shows how we're responding to the SDGs, so when it becomes necessary for us to be reporting, you can see how we've allocated budgets that start to respond to the SDG goals, which are shown on the left-hand side. Now, moving specifically to the Built Environment Performance Plan, I think it's important to understand that we have a particular city. We didn't arrive with a clean slate to plan a new city. The city was there. So our settlement patterns are issues that we need to look at. So if you look at the formal households, which are in blue, most of those formal households are in the urban core. If you look at the informal settlements, which are shown in brown, you can see a lot of those are on the urban periphery.
That mega development, just outside the urban.
Conubia?
Yeah. Where does this fit in here?
I'll come to it just now. I'll show you where Conubia is. So these are the existing settlement patterns in Itequini. We've got a huge rural area and dispersed rural settlements. We've got informal settlements on the urban periphery, and we've got formal households in the urban core. That means that we've got lots of challenges to deal with urban transformation. The first one is that we are a low-income city. So if you look at most of the area of our city, not necessarily the people in the city, but most of the area of the city is covered by people having a household income that's less than 5,000 Rand per month. So if you look at the big red areas, those are all areas where the household income is less than 5,000 per month. And if you look at the other end of the spectrum, greater than 25,000 per month, you can see there are small areas, particularly in the urban core in the north and part of the, basically the old parts of Durban. So that's a huge challenge in trying to transform the city, looking at the reality of the city being a low-income city. We're also a low-density city. So if you look at the city, most of the city has got dwelling units per gross hectare of about one or less than one, and very few parts of the city. If you look at the old township areas, Amlazi, Kwamashu, etc., you'll start to see township areas in particular where the density is at the levels that we would need it to be in order for us to have a sustainable settlement. We've also got segregation. So if you look at, and here I'm talking about land use segregation in particular, you'll see that there are a huge residential areas, but they're quite distinct and separate from our economic nodes, which means that that we have a challenge of trying to make our residential areas more multi-use, and you'll see how we're addressing that as well. So looking at how we deal with these challenges, we through our engagements with National Treasury and through the development of the Built Environment Performance Plan, the need to look at integration zones in particular has arisen. So if you look at the light gray area, that's the initial integration zone that we looked at. But we then said it's the integration zone in itself is quite wide, and we can't start to look at integration zones only. We've got to start to distill that down into what we call a prime investment corridor. So you'll see the prime investment corridor in the darker shade of green. That's the prime investment corridor that we've shown in the BEP. And we've then said we've got to overlay that now with our next response, which is our integrated public transport network. So if you look at our integrated public transport network, it's overlaid and integrated with our prime investment corridor. In fact, if anything, our prime investment corridor is informed by our integrated public transport network. And we've looked at the economic nodes that sit along here, so you'll start to see our existing CBDs, etc. These are the economic nodes that fall well within our prime investment corridor and within our integration zone. And we've looked at catalytic projects. So you can start to see that our catalytic projects, again, are all aligned more or less with our prime investment corridors, so that we're getting investments in the right areas. So now our challenge has been, so how do we deal with having created that integration zone and that prime investment corridor, how do we then deal with marginalized areas and responses to marginalized areas? So if you look at our townships and our ex-owned affairs areas, you can see them shown in the light brown on the slide. If you look at our informal settlements, which are really the areas where we've got the greatest levels of impoverishment, you can see them again on the periphery. And what we've done then is to link those areas to our prime investment corridor through a series of primary connectors, as well as a series of township hubs. So we've identified township hubs, major and secondary township hubs, which are shown on the slide. And then we've brought in a set of secondary connectors to make sure that these marginalized and poverty-stricken areas are well linked to the prime investment corridor. And we've then introduced a series of incremental services so that we start to respond to well-located informal settlements, as well as our housing mega and mixed-use catalytic projects, as well as our housing program. And you'll start to see some of the challenges, which I'll summarize in a table later down the line. Whilst we've managed to get much of our investment concentrated in our prime investment corridor, we're still working very hard with our colleagues, particularly on the human settlement side, so that we get more of the housing program as well as the housing mega and catalytic projects located within the corridor, so that we start to target well-located informal settlements so that we don't end up impoverishing people through huge costs associated with transport, etc. Here's an example of our C3 corridor that that we've just about finished now. In fact, we're waiting for a go-live date. And you'll see our strategy in the corridor has not been just to build the spine, but we've got an adjacent land use strategy. And you'll see in the Transport Authority slides that also come later some of the partnerships that we've built around the program. We've also been looking with National Treasury through the City Support Program at implementing some kind of transversal management program here so that we get better traction and more integrated delivery in the corridor. We may also, in the fullness of time, have to look at some kind of special purpose vehicle to look at land banking and developing these corridors, etc. There's some pictures of the corridor. It's been built already. Here's C9. C9 links Conubia, Chairperson. You asked about Conubia. It links Bridge City through to Conubia and then to Gateway. So this corridor is later in our program, but we've already, as you can see in the next slide, we've built the interchange, or the interchange across the N2 is currently under construction, and I'll show you some targeted completion dates later. Here's Conubia and pictures of some of our catalytic projects that we spoke about. So there's pictures of Dube Trade Port, pictures of Conubia, and you can see that these are well developed now and almost fully functional and up and running. C2, Chair, important message around this corridor. This is our biggest corridor in our network, and we really need the support of PRASA because it's a rail-based corridor. And so once I saw the CEO of PRASA in the newspaper, our former city manager, talking about building a rail link between Pietermaritzburg and Durban, we appeal very strongly for him to give us as much priority on this corridor as they might do in thinking about another investment between Pietermaritzburg and Durban. This is our prime corridor. It's a critical success factor and also a critical risk to us. So investments on rolling stock, investments on the stations here, investments on the nodes are absolutely critical for us. And we would ask the committee to support us in getting PRASA to we've got very good cooperation with PRASA, I might say, but it's important that PRASA is stabilized and that we make the kind of investments that we need here. Here's catalytic projects along the C2 corridor, rail corridor. You can see Clearwood Logistics Park, which is under construction, as well as Nedbank Square. And here's the essence of our challenge. You can see that over the 3 years of the MTF, we've spent about 35% in 16-17, 36% in 17-18, and we've dropped a little bit in 18-19. And these are investments, or these are percentages of the capital budget that are directed into the prime investment corridor. Now, we're doing a bit more work in our budget process, so we're looking to reform our budget process, so we've got a bit more time to make sure that we get the right projects and we don't end up with projects and then we work out how many of those projects are in those zones. It's about getting the process right. We've also identified more transversal programs that we need to run in the prime investment corridor. It's not just a transport project, it's a transport land use. There's a governance issue, so it's a transversal project, and we need to work transversally as a city in that area. We've also had a problem with spatial mapping over the years. Now that we've moved to MSCOA and there's a need for projects to have coordinates, etc., all of that's improving. But some projects also may be located out of the investment corridor but impact on the corridor, so we're improving our data so that we get a much better fix. But this table will effectively set our spatial prioritization strategy moving forward. What we want to see here is that there's an increasing spend in our prime investment corridor as we move from MTREF to MTREF. Some of it's not just about spatial, so we've been working with National Treasury, and we really need to thank National Treasury through the City Support Program. They've spent huge budgets in our city supporting us. So we've had the World Bank Subnational Doing Business Project, which identified three important processes in our city that we need to improve upon in order to create an enabling business environment. And we also have just completed the second survey. Now we're waiting for results to come from that survey so we can see what else we need to improve. We've been actively building partnerships. The city manager's led our customer relations management strategy, and we set up Team Durban as well, so that we'll get more traction with the private sector responding to what we want to see as the public sector. We've had an incentives policy, which we're reviewing as well, so that we start to incentivize development in our brownfields prime investment corridors rather than greenfield corridors. We've also had a business retention and expansion program, which we're trying to fine-tune through an industrial revitalization program. So we've selected three industrial areas in the city, and we've gone in there through a process trying to understand what are the things that would make those investors in those spaces invest more. So there are a range of responses that we're getting from issues around regulations not being or regulations being outdated, through the public realm needs to be maintained and cleaned and operated better. But there's also some infrastructure improvements that we bring into our program. We've also set up again through assistance with the CSP and World Bank. We've set up our investment promotion function. We're resourcing that now, and hopefully we'll be. They've got a very big target of capturing foreign direct investment, and we expecting in terms of the business plan that we'll get a payback in 7 to 10 years on the initiatives the budgets that we spend in this space. We've also been working then, it's not just about aligning budgets spatially, but also how we align with our provincial counterparts, and I think our colleague from National Treasury talked about that. We've been working with the Health Department, looking, and you can see some of the big health investments are all coming into our prime investment corridor. We've been talking to Public Works, and we set up engagements with Public Works, and we've agreed that we will assist each other in joint planning, but also joint implementation. We've had discussions with the Provincial Department of Health. We're making good progress there. They've agreed to provide us with more funding, and we're also assisting them for providing input on their MTF. So I'll now hand over to my colleague just to take you through the trading services, and I'll come back and close off with the rest.
Okay. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, and the members of the committee, and as I always do, I do want to acknowledge my mayor and my city manager and all the colleagues that came with us. I will shoot quite fast here, but allow me to just bring in these issues that are not in the slide, but I will go very fast. One of them, maybe the first comment I wanted to make, Chair, is that we, in fact, I think the colleagues from National Treasury covered this, that we have a number of plans that guide us in how we deliver water and sanitation services. One of them that we have recently developed is the Water Conservation and Water Demand Management Plan. But that does not mean that we didn't have the program before that. We've had a program for some time, but we've just concretized our plans in a formal document now. We have another plan that also informs, and some of the slides I'll be showing you come from these plans that I'm mentioning now. The other one is the Security of Supply Plan. This is a plan that is aligned to the Department of National Department of Water and Sanitation's plan. So we have our own plan that implements that. The infrastructure master plans we have is actually work in progress on our side for water and sanitation, but I will touch a bit on some of those things as well. But I want to appeal for help from the committee is in terms of the Smithfield Dam. When we talk about security of supply, the one last project, big one, that is very important for our city is the Smithfield Dam. The original plan was that dam would have been commissioned in 2023. Then it has moved now to 2027. And every time we hear a new date, Jefferson, we get worried, because our projections are that if that dam is not implemented, we will be in the red. We will have a deficit in terms of the water available for our people. So like, well, if this is accelerated to the ministers ahead, we're really sincerely asking for some help. It makes sure that the new 2027, which we are not comfortable with, but if that is that new date, that it does not shift further. Okay. We have.
Where about is the dam on this picture?
I will show you. It's part of. It's one of the. I don't think it's in the slides. That's why I'm adding it now. But it's very important for the security. Please, we'll do that, Chief. Yeah. So security of supply, we're asking for help. The last one that I always raise, Chair, if I have a platform, is the issue of the independent regulator. The National Treasury touched on that when they spoke about the tariffs, the way we determine tariffs. At the moment, the process, I think, is the water boards come and make a presentation to the committee, a portfolio committee, and then that goes to the minister and the decision is made on what the tariffs are going to be. The rest of us then have to live with what the Minister of Water and Sanitation then decides. Whereas on the electricity side, there is an independent regulator, which is called NERSA, we all know. So ESCOM has to go and argue their case at NERSA, and they either get what they want or they get something less. We feel not sufficiently accommodated in the process, Honorable Chair, and if the committee can assist us with that, it would be appreciated. The slides now, just go into the slides that you have, and I'll skip some because of time is limited. The first one was just to show you, Chair, that we have coverage in terms of water and sanitation almost throughout the city. Sanitation, we're around just over 84% in terms of access to sanitation for the people in our city. The water, we've done even much better than that. I think we're around 93%. But the slide that you have in front of you is just showing you the coverage in terms of our network that we have. So the first one was water. The next one is the sanitation. So I'll go very fast. The sewer network. The next slide that says customer services, yes, you can see it, is just showing you there how many people in our city, the first line, receive free basic water, solid waste, and electricity. So we have about 570,000 customers that receive free basic water, and about 382,000 customers receive free basic sanitation. Metered, we have about 517,000 customers that are metered. I'll skip the rest here on account of time. In terms of the spend for 17-18 for water and sanitation, this point was again made earlier by National Treasury. If you look at the last column, I'm starting from the end, that talks to challenges. It refers to these work stoppages by various people, business forums being one of them, and communities stopping us because they want to benefit from the project. So in 17-18, for example, we've been affected severely in terms of the spend. So you can see that for water, we're projecting that we're going to spend about 71%, and sanitation about 64%. But if you look at how we previously performed in the years before, if you look at 13-14, we actually spent more than the allocation that we had for water and sanitation. It's a graph from the far right. And it's been declining, but 17-18 was really the worst affected, because the blue is the budget that was affected, it was allocated, and the green is actually what we spent. So we around 70% of our capital budget that we spent. It's mainly because of work being stopped on the ground. As I said earlier, we have an infrastructure master plan that we are working on. This slide is just trying to show you some of the items that come from that plan. We have treatment works, upgrades that we have to do to support economic development. We have reservoirs to make sure that we have storage, water storage. It's part of security of supply and so on. So we've got pump stations, trunk mains. So those are all the projects that we've planned over the next 5 years. The same for sanitation. We have the rural sanitation program. We've budgeted about $110 million over the next five years. The pollution block, that's our interim services program that we roll out in the informal settlements, so about $870 million over the next 5 years. And extending our sewer articulation, we have to upgrade treatment works, and the figures are there in front of you. The total at the bottom being about R2 billion, 1.9. This next slide, maybe I will not spend too much time on it, but it's really the detail on other work that we do. The plan that I was talking about when I started, the water conservation, water demand management plan, those are the allocations that we have in the budget over the next 5 years, starting from about 164 in 2016-17, in 2021, $221 million. But there are various items. The security all is to show that there is commitment to this plan that we have. Well, the security of supply plan also has items in the budget, and they are listed. If we look at the current financial year, we have projects worth about $421 million that would assist us with the security of supply. Backlog eradication for water, about $13 million, yeah? Yes, and depot requirements, because we have depots, but we'd like to rearrange our depots. So those are all the allocations that you have. Sanitation infrastructure master plan, also there is a further detail on what you saw earlier. For asset management, we've got allocations for regulatory requirements, because this is a difficult one. Sanitation is always difficult, because if you don't do something, you're immediately in breach of the law. So we prioritize that, but in 2017-18, so you'd have about $300 million. Backlog eradication, about $556 million in 2017-18, and I think that's what is important there. Non-revenue water was mentioned earlier. Maybe I shouldn't go through this, but I can tell you that at the end of June this year, we ended at around 32%. Chair, this is one of the areas where we performed better than we had targeted. I think our target was around 38%, so we ended up at 32%. I saw a figure, Chris, in the other presentation, in the National Treasury presentation, said 1.3 billion. Our own calculation is around 6. The whole year. We think we ended around 638 million, so it's not as much as 1.3 billion. In terms of performance on the water targets, number of households with access to at least a basic level of service, you have about five financial years in front of you, Chair, and I think when I was looking at them, with all of them, we have performed better than we had targeted. If I take the first one, our target was to connect 877,000 people. We connected 874. That one wasn't too good. But the others, we did better. In 2018, we targeted 889. We did 925. And that's for water. For sanitation, in 2017-18, the target was 813. We did 835. So with most of our targets, we still have a target. As it pertains to water sanitation, we did better than we had targeted. I will not go into detail with the challenges. The challenges and interventions. Water and sanitation, sorry, water loss. We call it not having water here. It is still a challenge. And the adequate of resources, infrastructure. Those are in this slide. You have what we call a challenge and what we are doing about it. So there are various plans that address that. For example, the infrastructure stability, we have the replacement program that will go on we'll be spending about $150 million every year for the next few years. I will skip. So just to go to electricity, the IDP, in the IDP we have a focus area that says meet infrastructure and household service needs and backlogs. There are programs within that area, one of them being the electrification program. In the 18-19 financial year, there's $200 million allocated for that to provide about 15,000 connections. But in the IDP, SDBIP target was 20,000, but we'll do 15,000. Free basic electricity is $90 million budgeted. Electricity loss mitigation, we've got $100 million budgeted for that. And the electricity infrastructure expansion and upgrade, we've got about $745 million. I think this is repeated there. And the major projects in electricity, one of them is the smart meter rollout. I think it's an important initiative. In the slide, you can see what the budget allocations are. We've 25 million in 2017-18. We've got 40 million in 25 and 25. Electrification, the statement that's just being made that if we were to reduce the backlog from 30 years, where it currently is, and we try to eradicate that in 10 years, we would need about 15.5 billion rand to do that. I'll skip the... If I go to solid waste, this slide is showing you that we receive about 1.2 million tons per year of solid waste. Our western areas, we still have infrastructure. We have a backlog to the infrastructure that need to be resolved. One of our landfill sites, the Marion Hills, will be closed soon, and there's a new proposed solid waste landfill site in Shongweni. We've given you a lot of detail in terms of the budget allocations. I don't think we have the time to go through each one, but you can see that the Shongweni, for example, Shongweni landfill site, we've budgeted over the next 5 years about 104 million, and so on. Lovu landfill site, 57 million, and so on. The keep going. Okay, projects with challenges. I do remember when we came here last year, this one was a challenge at that time as well. The DSW Shongweni landfill site, where we need some assistance from the MEC in terms of dealing with the appeal. It means there's an appeal that needs to be dealt with, and there's been some delays. There is a problem of integrated waste management. The strategy here for the city is to reduce waste, and there are three programs or projects that the city is implementing to reduce waste. One is to make sure that waste is separated at source. It's one initiative. There is another one called Operations Paquita Strategy, which is garden refuse, pertains to garden refuse and rubble treatment. And then there is the integrated waste management planning. Waste is a resource. This slide, I think, just talks to how waste is managed, from separating it at source and the streams that it follows after that. I will skip that one. Let me thank you, dear.
Very quickly then, just to finish off with the service delivery units, that's what the engineering unit is all about. It's deliverables. It looks at roads and bridges and stormwater, as well as provides a consultancy service to other departments. I'll skip that. That's how they've performed over the years. So if you look, the slide is backwards, so 13-14 is on the right. You look at how they spend relative to the budget. So you'll see that in some years, particularly because of storm damage and emergency funding, in fact, in most of the years, they spend more than the budget that they've got. That's some of the major projects. We won't go through that in any great detail. I'll just talk very quickly. The gravel-to-surface program, we're looking at 12 kilometers of the new year. There's about 39 kilometers of sidewalks that they're building, and they look after the 7,000 kilometers of roads that for rehabilitation purposes. Then on the stormwater maintenance side, we also run here a low-volume gravel road upgrade program. We're spending about 75 million rand a year there, and there's two community-based contracting programs, Zibambele and Zimvelo, which is a stream cleaning and et cetera, where we employ people from the community. Coastal stormwater and catchment management, we've developed a flood early warning system, so they're looking at developing that further. We also run the sand pumping scheme, and they also look after all our stormwater network. Development engineering is a consultancy service to other departments. Architecture is also a consultancy service to other departments, and that's some of their bigger projects. The challenges are the same as Edney covered. We've had issues around stoppages. We've also got aging infrastructure. About more than 75% of our infrastructure has exceeded 50% of its remaining useful life. So we've got a big asset management strategy around making sure that we don't have challenges there. Then the Transport Authority, I spoke earlier about the IPTN, and you'll see, I'll jump straight to some of the projects. You can see in this slide we talk about C3 being operational in 2018, in a later slide we talk about 2019. I think we still need to agree on the go-live date, but you'll see the corridors when they targeted for effectively becoming operational. Chair, you talked about C9, which is the link through to Gateway and Konubia, and you can see that our target is 2020 for that to go live. We've been talking about mobilizing financial resources. In fact, we've had discussions with National Treasury about gearing up our grant. But we've first got to get our house in order and make sure that we can spend the money that we have. But it's a program that would benefit from faster implementation because it's restructuring our city as well. But obviously, we've got to look at it very carefully. As our treasurer always tells us, we can't afford to roll out more than what we can afford. We've got to do that quite carefully. Progress to date, you can see there we're talking about C3 2019 being the operational date. But you can see in most of these corridors, the infrastructure rollout has commenced or the planning's been completed, etc. So we as Durban took a little bit longer to get off the ground with our IPTN, and that's because we believe we needed to plan the whole network first. And I think we're benefiting it from it now, seeing that we can really accelerate the implementation. We had a bit of a problem in the 17-18 year due to a range of problems that we've spoken about earlier, negotiations with the taxi industry, work stoppages. We've had some SCM challenges. But you can see for the new financial year, 18-19, we've applied for a rollover, and we're planning to spend at least another 600 million rand more than what we have in the budget. Our program's geared up to do that. We've got committed contracts, so we're ready to spend that money, provided we get, and we'd appreciate support from the committee for that rollover as well. Yes, you can see the grants and our expenditure, and you can see what I was talking about earlier, that we're planning to spend about 600-odd million rand more, and we're ready to spend 600 million rand more than the budget that we have. Focus for the next 5 years, we've obviously got to go live on C3. We're moving on C9 at the moment. We want to start construction on C1. We're looking at the fleet procurement for C3, and then obviously starting the operations on C3. Challenges, I spoke about that earlier. Thanks to our leadership, we're getting on top of most of these. But again, there are issues that we continuously need to keep our eyes on. Human settlements, you can see our restriction here really is the grant, the HSDG. So you can see in 17-18 we delivered 4,364 houses out of a target of 4,200. As I said, our main restriction here is the amount of money that's allocated to us. Here's some of the housing projects from 17-18 to 2021. So you'll see some of the green is the 17-18, yellow is 2021, and the red is 19-20. So these are where all our projects are. And again, as I mentioned earlier, part of what we're looking to do is to get more of these projects better located in respect of our prime investment corridor. Challenges similar. Challenges to what we've showed before. We've also had problems with the invasion of some of our housing projects, and that's really around, and we've had good support from our political leadership. We've had the MK veterans invading parts of the new houses, and we've had good support around trying to address that. We've covered these challenges, so I'm not going to go through that in any great detail. Now we want to thank National Treasury for the study that was done looking at affordable housing, and we're looking to implement some of those recommendations. And then lastly, I think our CFO just wants 5 minutes, but just on the USDG, you can see we've spent 100% of the grant, so we make sure that we manage these grants very well. And once we are a city that doesn't rest on our laurels, we always look at continuous improvements, but I think we must acknowledge the efforts of our leadership in that we are an award-winning city. So, Chair, I think that's the end of me. I think our CFO just wants 5 minutes to brush up on some of those financial issues that were raised by National Treasury. Thank you very much.
CFO?
5 minutes? Thank you.
Chair,
thank you very much. Chair, let me just indicate that I fully am in alignment with National Treasury, and let me use an accounting term that says auditing term. It was a fair presentation for National Treasury. Fair means, Chair, in accounting, auditing parlance, it means that in all material respects, it was fairly presented.
You don't fight with the HE?
No, and I don't fight with National Treasury, but we do have our moments.
with findings. So, Chair, I think on sustainability, and I'm just going to go to the last page of National Treasury. On sustainability, I think our key issue is urbanization, which you've heard Adrian talk about, and National Treasury acknowledged that. Chair, I think Itikweni is very unique in that we, unlike some of the other metros, and Mangaung may be similar to us, but we've got 400,000 informal settlements, and we've 400,000 informal settlements, and we've got 400,000 paying ratepay residential. So you've got straight away a misbalance in terms of the amount that you can cross-subsidize. So therefore, when you see the fact that the urbanization rate is so high, you're going to get more and more people coming in, and if we're not creating jobs, and therefore our number one priority, Chairperson, is, and honorable members, is about job creation. Because if we can create sustainable jobs, we'll break the poverty trap. So it's something that's pretty much in our focus, and we intend doing that through the National Treasury Program of Capital-Led Projects, maybe making sure that we can build confidence in the economy and create the sustainability that's required. So, Chair, we fully agree that in recent times, particularly with the state of the economy, collection rates have dropped. In 2016-17, it was 98.07%, and in 15-16, it dropped to 96.55%. Chair, National Treasury, another day, if you're not in the room, they'll probably tell you we've actually always led the country on collection rates, and they rated us for many years either number one or number two in terms of overall sustainability and the issue of good, prudent management. Chair, we have taken National Treasury's lead based on the submissions made in 15-16 on reducing our free basic package, and we've actually reduced water where it was previously everybody qualified for 6 litres of water. It's now a targeted approach where you only if you're in a property that's valued less than 250,000, you would actually qualify for free basic water. And in several other areas, we've actually also reduced the free basic package. The informal settlements still plague us with regard to providing basic services. And, Chair, the cost of bulk services, Chair, if I also could follow up on Ethnic's plea, the cost of dams are crippling us. You've seen in cities that, and I agree, our firm focus should be on reducing water loss. But equally as we reduce water losses, I think the cost of new dams, et cetera, Chair, has really impacted tremendously. Water cost of Durban water has actually doubled in the last 5 years. So it's a major, major contributing factor. I really commend the national regulator, NERSA, for actually keeping electricity increases in line. I think the actual opportunity to actually reduce that further is dimming, considering that the issue of outages have come back to plague us, and I think that on water we can only hope that we have a regulator in place sooner rather than later. Chair, on the issue of going back to collections, Chair, just on the Ingonyama Trust, we have tried to, the IGR process, come up with a solution. It hasn't worked. There's still strong feelings that the Ingonyama Trust should not pay rates, and there's a lot of land under the trust control. We're not at all. We understand the sensitivities behind that, but it just really makes it very difficult for us as a city to be able to manage that in terms of spatial planning in an effective way without proper consolidation and without properly bringing that in a sustainable way into the mainstream of the economy and how we actually go through the entire process of reincorporating some of those issues. Chair, the court processes with regard to collections, it's not nice to take someone to court, but we used to have a very, very effective process in the old legislation that allowed us to actually put a mass sale and execution process forward. Now you've got to take each property firstly to the magistrate's court, and only if the debt is totally out, then we go to the actual high court for sale of property. And each one of those takes a long time to go to the court process. So it's costly, and it's a very, very lengthy process. Coupled with deceased estates and deregistered property, Chair, it's making our ability to collect very difficult. Chair, we'd really like the committee, if you want to see local government really maximize fiscal effort, I would actually really plead that we actually be given the same powers as SARS. And then I think it'd be a fair comparison. That way we would actually be able to get garnishing orders, we'd be able to actually more effectively get the monies up front from people and businesses and the like. But we're doing everything, Chair, and I don't agree to anything other than what's fair. And I think we must actually do a fair process of making sure that everything is due. Chair, I think Sifiso touched on unfunded mandates. The big one is obviously housing. And on housing, the devolution issues, Chair, has come before this committee. The FFC have brought it. And I think, Chair, it's fair considering the challenges that we have with regard to urbanization and the fact that we need to actually plan more effectively on our own without being restricted by a provincial plan, and we're not at odds with the province here. We've worked very well with our province. In fact, I think I must really commend the relationship under the leadership of our mayor and city manager over the last 2 to 3 years. We've really grown a lot closer to each other. So it's not that, it's just that it creates better sustainability if those grants are given directly to us and we're able to deal with the entire human sector platform in a far more effective way. So, Chair, that will be one plea. And, Chair, the other issues are around libraries and health services, which are equally crippling the finances. So the 1.3 billion that you see there, Chair, is primarily those three services that are impacted. Chair, on irregular expenditure, I commend, if you saw again, the National Treasury for so transparently indicating our plight. Chair, any irregular expenditure in our city is not tolerated. The city manager and the leadership, headed by our mayor, has taken a zero-tolerance approach to it. Unfortunately, in 16-17, it was 530 million, but one incident you would have seen on the slide was 385 million, which is a tax compliance matter where a company tendered with a subsidiary and thereafter they put it to the parent company. So that, if not, would have had 128 million. Again, I'm not proud of the 128 million. We strive for zero tolerance. But Chair, these are the checks and balances that we have. We don't approve irregular expenditure unless it goes through a rigorous process of going to our Bid Education Committee, of looking at consequence managed by a CR unit, and then only we sign up by the city manager and we pay the service provider. So it's a very cumbersome process and onerous and deliberately so. The issue of consequence management is high on agenda and we have got the Financial Misconduct Control Board, thanks to National Treasury. They've actually orientated our members and it's now functional, so they'll be providing oversight. Chair, what we do, which other cities don't do, and National Treasury has recommended that, we do monthly monitoring, and in our Section 71 report to National Treasury, we indicate our irregular expenditure. We indicate clearly monthly any unauthorized expenditure and any items that are over budget. Chair, we're happy to note that there was no unauthorized expenditure in the 1617.
No, we know you have to wrap up now. I'm on the last point.
Chair, on the last point, Chair, just allow me, Chair. I think, Chair, when you look at the challenges of the city, and I really want to appreciate this committee together with all of the parliamentary oversight committees in terms of the fact that you've actually appreciated that cities are the future, that cities are where the growth is taking place, cities is where 80% of the GDP is generated. Chair, with all of that, if you look at the funding gap, and Chair, when I talk about the funding gap, I'm saying let's maximize fiscal effort. So if we're not maximizing revenue streams, if we're not maximizing operational efficiencies, once we've actually done all of that, I'm saying there's still a fiscal gap, and the FFC are here to be a testimony to that. Chair, please consider an alternative form of revenue stream for local government, particularly the cities. Chair, if not, the cities are going to fail into oblivion. All the lovely transport systems that we bring in, etc., cannot be sustained on the existing basis. We cannot incrementally improve our informal settlements without that. So, Chair, that will be my plea. Thank you very much.
Thank you to the Metro. Thank you to the Honourable Mayor with her team. Mango Hung, are you ready? Mango Hung, we received your presentation 7:06 this morning, and we couldn't open it. So we were totally disadvantaged. We couldn't read it. So the document was given to us in this meeting. So we didn't have the opportunity to work through it. National Treasury made an analysis of each metro. So I refer members to the Treasury presentation as well. Honorable Motara, I note you.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I have a request. Can we engage with the presentation from Itahuni first and dispose of it and then go to Mangaung? Because it's quite long and detailed.
Yeah.
I'm just worried that by the time we get to Mangaung, we may not be able to engage properly. Thanks.
No, fine. It's 10 to 12. I'm going to give you 15 minutes because we must be mindful of our time. We must leave you at 1:45 to be in plenary at 2 o'clock, and it's a three-line whip. You all received emails. It's a three-line whip. You want to engage with the Equitwini? Please, members, don't make speeches. Put your question, 1, 2, 3, finish, please. Don't make speeches. We don't have time for that. Aldo Motara, your hand is up. I recognize you. Anyone else? Aldo Blanche. Aldo Monachetti. And Aldo Zumandi from KZN. Please, can Aldo Motara?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I think let me end where the presentation. Well, let me start where the presentation ended. The municipality made a plea that we assist them with looking at other revenue streams, and if perhaps they can, if they can propose some, it would assist us. But I think the my questions to Tekwini, they will also go to National Treasury. Your currently your cash flow is under immense pressure, and you, what is probably causing it amongst others is your revenue collection. I saw that your deficit is you're running at a deficit. What plans are in place to increase your revenue collection? I'm not sure. You mentioned you wish that municipalities could be like SARS, and I'm not sure what aspects of SARS you are looking at. But in my understanding, is that the municipality is a legal entity and can enter into collection mechanisms, and the municipality will have to look at that at some point. That's the one. The second is that are you making use of qualified city planners in the municipality, because it almost seems as if you are planning, but your planning is not integrated some way. So, and I'm not able to see that. The other is it's for the committee, but also to National Treasury, and I don't think National Treasury can or should actually respond. But I think, Chair, as a committee, with some of the issues that we've raised over time, we've fought very strongly with municipalities for them to be able to correct it, and National Treasury would have said that this is what they do in terms of support and oversight. But I'm almost it almost looks to me as if National Treasury does sort of like a desktop approach to oversight and almost paper compliance, and not necessarily on the ground sort of compliance. And municipalities are on the ground entities, so their plans, processes, everything on paper, it looks beautiful. And if you can stick to what you've put on paper, municipalities shouldn't ever even have to come to us. But the what I'm missing is the National Treasury's responsibility and the way they conduct, the manner that they conduct their oversight and assisting municipalities. So that's sort of like plug in between national policy, international policy, international requirements and things like that is not there. And then just broadly, has the municipality looked at using IT as an investment towards addressing shortcomings? So you have a lot of human error, which causes a lot of leakages in the system. So irregular, unauthorized expenditure, et cetera, et cetera. It may be an expensive investment, but in the long run, especially for metros, and there is a grant, I don't know if it's that will address that, but I might be incorrect. But that leakages are caused by human errors. And if you can address it by putting in IT infrastructure, it could go a long way. I think we saw it in Limpopo when we were dealing with them coming out of administration, financial administration, and it assisted them. Thanks, Chair.
That's what we experience in our Tambo District Municipality, on the ground oversight, and not email oversight. Honorable Blanche.
Chairperson, thank you.
Chairperson, let me start by recommending both National Treasury and Itakwini on a very comprehensive and an informative presentation. I have certain questions, though, Chairperson, and I'm coming to that. Chairperson, a few things is missing in the presentation of the municipality. In the sense, you know, they started off by saying that they want to be by 2030, that is their vision. What I'm still waiting for is how they're going to get there. I haven't heard anything about that. Fact of the matter is, you know, my biggest concern is, Chairperson, the two presentations do not speak to one another. You know, we had a very comprehensive presentation from the municipality indicating to us, you know, it's for me more on the level of a master plan that they presented here. If we go to this, there's no, vision statement. Fact of the matter is also the things that National Treasury raised, and that's the part that I'm missing, about the irregular expenditure, blah, 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 on page 70. The presentation that we got from the municipality does not touch on that. So really, I'm trying to understand how this came about. I mean, you need to also, for us, attend to the stuff that is in Treasury's presentation, and I'm missing this.
They can reply to your question on unauthorized, irregular, fruitful,
exactly,
or wasteful expenditure. Fine, they can capture that, and they can reply to it.
Chairperson,
the CFO is here.
Yeah. Chairperson, that is my few questions at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable de Blanche, Honourable Monakiri.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I also want to welcome the presentations that have been made by the National Treasury and the municipality. And also to commend the municipality in particular for the hard work and the planning that they go into to ensure that their plans are aligned, as they have indicated, with provincial, national, and even global plans that are there, or visions. I thought I should just commend the municipality on that one. And also the efforts they have put to try and make sure that they live up to those plans, no? I know my colleague here has said that he did not see necessarily any tangible sort of programs on the ground, but I thought as they were presenting, it came out very clear that these are tangible, concrete, projects that they have been able to implement on the ground to ensure that the 2030 vision ultimately indeed it is achieved. Obviously, there could be some improvements, but I'm just saying generally I'm sort of comforted that they are on track to ensure that they are able to achieve that particular vision. The second point that I need some clarity on is the Ingonyama Trust. They have raised this one, but it looks like they don't want to delve deeper into it, you know. So if they could just come out here, exactly what are they proposing, no? What are they proposing we should do to assist them in terms of making sure that going forward in the medium to long term, this particular matter is actually resolved. And on the issue of irregular expenditure, when the National Treasury was presenting, yeah, it's like they were actually choosing the municipality for this and not coming down hard on them to say they should make sure that it doesn't happen, you know. They were actually saying, no, they're doing very well and all those other things. And I'm just registering the point that I'm not very happy that the National Treasury
is not taking this matter seriously. And for sure going forward, the municipality is going to make sure that as they come back in the next interaction, this matter would have been addressed so that this figure is not there altogether or is, at least is reduced drastically. And yes, the last point, there was a reference to MK having invaded some land, but the matter, yeah, was resolved. I just want to understand how was it resolved, this invasion of the land by MK veterans. How was it resolved? Perhaps other municipalities, other provinces can learn one or two things in terms of how to deal with challenges like the one you came across as far as MK invading the land is concerned. Thank you very much.
The Select Committee for Finance take a hardline approach on the matter of unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure.
Okay. You know,
that message is very clear. We are consistent. There is no soft approach. There can't be. If you look at the State of the Nation address of His Excellency the President and the national budget tabled by the Minister of Finance, we're heading for a very difficult MTBBS the 24th of October. Make no mistake. Make no mistake. And that's why we have to enhance economic growth. On the alignment between the presentations, municipalities were requested to report on the LED, the IDP, and the alignment with the National Development Plan. The National Treasury gives the analysis of the rest, and that's how we engage. We did the same with the provincial treasuries. Honorable Zamandi.
Thank you, Chair. And in my appreciation of the presentation from my city, I don't live there, Chair, so I'm not their citizen. So I'm just next door to them at the capital. Yeah, Chair, no, but appreciating the good effort. It is a city at work from the demonstration on their presentation. Just a few clarity questions, Chair. One, just the terminology and obviously not being part of their processes. What is the, you know, they made mention of the low density in the township, but I couldn't understand what do they refer to, that they've got space and no people coming to settle, or that they don't have space. So just for them to give us a bit of detail, what do they mean by low density in the township, as they've made mention of that. Second term or terminology that they use is the township hubs, and I'm not too sure what they refer to when they refer to township hubs. Is now containing people into the former apartheid locations. Does it mean that when they're creating hubs in the township, so they are not integrated, so to speak, from the face value of from where I sit when hearing them expressing that kind of terminology. And then, Chair, you know, this matter, then also I think they make mention that they were advised by the National Treasury on the free basic services. And then they are saying, Chair, that they then look into it's property-based or the property value-based, which is 250,000, if I still remember correct. But, Chair, when we went there as the NCOP in KZN taking Parliament, the Provincial Week, one of the issues that were raised by people of Eteguini was the fact that they get from the estate, this estate, they get a house which is valued at 600,000, 700,000, but they are indigent. People that are occupying that are beneficial are indigenous, and the house doesn't make you rich because you're only living there in it as a shelter, but you're all collecting grants. So what is the plan there, and I mean the rationale? I know they had to comply. That it's what my colleague, I think, Mudara, was saying, that it's, you know, Treasury is more making them to comply on paper. Now, if you have a policy, I mean, your social policy or indigenous policy is not, then is disadvantaging to comply, then it's something that must be revisited, Chair. And then the other matter is the dam issue, Chair. The question would, besides us, you know, having to try and go and help, because as you just said, Chair, that the fiscals might even shift that thing further. So we can't. I mean, it depends on the priorities leading to that to 2027. Now, Chair, Etigwin is taking all the water from the province. I mean, all the dams, but the supplies, we only connect by the way, but it all goes to Durban. I think six dams that supply Durban, Etigwin, they run past us at the capital. So the fact that they still need more dams, I think what their concern is, they ask us to intervene. Is it because the conservation, they said here earlier, they have the conservation and water demand plan and the SSP. So the cry for the commissioning of the dam, how does it tally with that plan? Because that plan should talk to the fact that there will be no money for the dam to be commissioned as early as we'd like it. So if they could just clarify that matter, Chair, so that we don't take a matter further without being properly informed of what we really have to fight for against all other competing priorities. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. The golden rule is you can't spend money that you don't have. That's the golden rule. And you take your own finances as the example. Otherwise, the bank manager is going to call you. See what are you up to. Thank you, leadership, Mayor, and your team. You may reply. I'm going to give you 15 minutes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think firstly on the other revenue streams, I think certainly motivation has been made to National Treasury, and the FFC has in principle supported a local government business tax. I think it's the state of the economy that inhibits us from actually introducing such a tax, and we fully appreciate that. But we're saying, Chair, at some stage in the future, there should be some clarity given on that and some perhaps confidence being brought into the process that it will happen. And I fully appreciate the impact on business. Second issue, Chair, was the cash flow and the immense pressure it is under. Chair, I just want to record that I think we haven't incurred in any year deficit. In fact, in 2016-17, the surplus was just over 2 billion, and in 2017-18, the surplus again is just over 2 billion. What we may be referring to is the deterioration of cash position, which I think Sufiso did cover in indicating that we had actually used our own funding to fund capital expenditure. Chair, further issue around that is that we budgeted to borrow R1 billion. We only borrowed 700 million in 16-17. So therefore, and a direct impact on our own reserves. And the reason for that, Chair, was primarily the state of the economy and the fact that interest rates had shifted tremendously in that year. Our collection rates, as I indicated, there's been a shift about 1.5% between 16-17 and 15-16, primarily because of the state of the economy again. Chair, what I prefer, what I like about SARS, if you give me the same tax policy and the way they are able to recover debt, that's all I want. So the garnishing orders, for example, local government doesn't have the authority to issue a garnishing order. A tax clearing certificate, they don't have that particular ability. So I think those are some of the things that we want to build into the local government regime. So if that could be done and the MFMA could accordingly be amended, it will help us. Chair, in terms of National Treasury and its oversight, Chair, I really commend them. Everything that you see in Itikweni today in terms of good governance, financial good management, has been due to the oversight of National Treasury and the benchmarking they provide for us, the MSCOA-related issues that they brought into play. We fight with them a lot, Chair, but I promise you that when it comes to, they perhaps don't display it here, but there's zero tolerance from them in terms of, and no favors are given to us. They've been brutal. Some of the reports we get from them are very unkind, we say, but we understand where they're coming from. They are ultimately the last line of defense for government, and we appreciate the role they play. So no friends there, but certainly people that we can look up to in terms of upholding good governance and making sure that we're accountable. Jay, in terms of IT investment, I couldn't agree more. We certainly pride ourselves in wanting to be a smart city. The investments are huge. We want to integrate customer relations management. We want to ensure completeness of billing. You've seen some indication of smart meters. Jay, if we rolled out smart meters in the city, you actually have a totally different perspective of having to go out and read meters. You can read remotely. But it comes at a huge price. So I'd really welcome, provided there's a business case, looking at some sort of incentive or some sort of grant to actually really promote issues of completeness of billing. The MSCOA that we've just gone about is a tremendous system. It just needs to actually slow the pace because it's quite onerous. But I think it's incredible what we can do with IT. Chair, the last couple of issues that were raised were the issues around National Treasury. Are they doing sufficient? Chair, the Section 71 tells the entire story. I think you go anywhere in the world and you will not see monthly reporting by local government. I serve in another capacity with the World Bank in terms of actually looking at how we actually assist other cities. And I've been throughout Southern Africa, I've been to various parts of the world, including from India to Brazil to many parts of the development world, and nowhere have I seen anything near what we have as Section 71 report. They certainly use me as a person that actually goes out and actually shows our reporting and what we can achieve through good governance and effective reporting. So I think there's some tremendous things that have come out of that process. Chair, in terms of irregular expenditure, I did indicate that the figure of 513 million, there's one item of 385 million by a single vendor in terms of tax compliance issue. It would have been 128 million. Again, we take no pride in the 128 million. Chair, we fully align ourselves with your views that irregular expenditure is regular expenditure. Hold the people accountable, get to the root cause of it, do the necessary. And we're reporting this, Chair, as I indicated, on a monthly basis. So we are putting oversight, and it goes to our exco throughout. Lastly, Chair, is about the Ingonyama Trust. Chair, on the Ingonyama Trust, we fully respect the commission that has been set up in terms of the traditional land, and we will await the outcome of that particular issue. We've taken up to IGR on both sides, Chair. It's not as if we didn't have the will to do it. They're compelling arguments as to why it should be not taxed. And on our side, we're saying we want wall-to-wall taxation in terms of the MPRA, and we've got to respect those processes. It is sensitive, like I've indicated, but we would really like to see ultimately some finality so that from a spatial planning perspective, we're able to actually plan better in terms of how we manage those land parcels and then effectively bring them to the mainstream of rating. Chair, I think that totally covers the issues that we raised. And Chair, lastly, the indigent policy. Chair, with regard to indigent policy, National Treasury only guided us in terms of the cost of free basic services where they felt the package was too generous. We implement our own indigent policy, and I think the issue of child-headed households and indigent is provided for in terms of our indigent policy, so it is there. And, Chair, we will take from the Honourable Member any further guidance that he has in terms of how we could improve our accessibility to vulnerable communities, because we certainly are committed to supporting vulnerable communities. So, Chair, but definitely we believe that a universal approach is far more effective because indigent registers for us are just not being effective. It's costly, difficult to maintain and manage, and all of those issues are chosen. So that's why we've chosen that approach. Thank you.
For how long are you the CFO now?
Yeah, I've been in the same city for 38 years and the CFO for 19 years.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chair. Greetings to honorable members. I'm going to take a couple of questions, but the first question that I'd like to take relates to what Honorable Motala,
please focus on the reply.
Honorable Motala raised, where she basically said that are we making use of the qualified city planners?
Yes, indeed, Honorable Member, we do. I'm one such qualified city planner. I'm the head of city planning. We have been participating in all these processes, trying to dismantle stubborn apartheid spatial planning, and we have participated fully in the BEP process, which is an integrative and coordinative mechanism. That's why we are now beginning to see the movement from spatial plans into implementation. The second question, really, Krish has also responded to it, but I'd like to say something. It was raised by the Honorable Member on my left-hand side. It's about the Ingonyama Trust Board and how we relate, because the question was, we seem not to be delving deeper into it, and we're not proposing what the committee should be doing. Safe to say that the mayor and the provincial leadership collective are trying to engage Ingonyama Trust Board on how best we can work on dealing with the differences, particularly around the land tenure system. I think that is very critical, because if you are talking land use allocation process, you are effectively in the context of Ingonyama Trust land, impacting on the authority and the discretional powers of traditional authority to allocate land as they wish. The moment you introduce Western standard of land use to say you can't have this development there, you can't have it there, you are basically impacting on their power, and that has been at the core of their resistance, because they feel that if we extend the land use scheme into their areas, we are basically affecting those powers. And for you to be able to allocate or collect rates, you need to have the scheme which will be linked to cadastra, and for you to be able to rate those properties. So it's not a simple issue of who has what power. It's a question of getting into the depth of their authority. So, but the mayor and the provincial leadership, as they've said, they are trying to work on this one to find a solution. So the last thing we want is for us to report them here, and only to find that all the negotiations that we are trying to do with them back in the province fall flat down. But we will come back to you if they continue to fail. Then the next two last questions that I would like to deal with were raised by Honorable Zimande. He's basically saying, what is the low density in the township, and what does it mean? Honorable Zimande, we are a low density city not only in the townships. We are a low density city across the length and breadth. But the problem with low density is that it doesn't support economic activities that are required. High density, which is the opposite end of low density, is desirable if you are talking about complex city, dense air cities, because those things increase economies of scale. High densities mean more business, people can trade with more people, but more importantly, you are able to sweat your assets in terms of infrastructure, because you've got more people using that infrastructure and benefiting from it. The current situation now that you find is that most post-apartheid South African cities are doing radial planning. So we are planning over a large space, and we are dispersing a development which becomes very costly now, because you have to provide reticulation of services into those areas. So low densities are good, but we are therefore saying this is what we are striving for as the city of Etegwini, to ensure that we have those high densities. The last question really that I would like to touch base on is also about township hubs. The mayor says, the member says, are you trying to recreate a segregated city? We are not doing that, Honorable Member. But what we are basically saying is, because our strategy is to concentrate on integration zone, right? Primary investment corridors and the nodes. If you look at those are areas that have always benefited during apartheid. Those are areas that have very well provided infrastructure. But now, how do you draw in the previously disadvantaged areas mainly the townships and rural areas. So it is through a network of these township hubs. So they are basically enclaves of high economic activities. So you've got mixed-use developments there, residential, retail, all economic sectors well represented. And now you need to have through a system of corridors and nodes begin to ensure that you draw the functional linkages between our townships and areas that are very well developed. That is the intention. So we are trying to dismantle the stubborn apartheid spatial pattern by ensuring that we link our township hubs with the areas that are very well developed that were benefiting from the previous era. That is really the plan as part of the spatial strategy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor. You can give the last word.
Let me respond to the question from Honorable Mzimande. It was about why we talk about water conservation, water demand management, and at the same time talk about the UDAM. The dam is part of four ways that we respond to security of supply. One of them is reuse, is one of the initiatives that we implement. The other one is desalination. Then it's water conservation, water demand management, and the new infrastructure is the last option. I think the member is correct in that the new infrastructure, because it's expensive, should be the last resort. And that's exactly what happens when we look at those four options. We use the other three options to delay the need for new infrastructure, and dams being one of them. But water conservation and water demand management in itself is not sufficient. If you look at the demand projections that are linked to growth, is not sufficient to significantly delay the need for new infrastructure. So that's why we are saying we can survive that until around 2025, 2026, but we are asking that we are not delayed further. So we need both.
Thank you so much, Chair. I should think that was the end of our questions and answers.
Thank you, Honorable Maria, and to you and your team for a highly informative presentation. It gives us a very good picture of what are you doing. What is crucial, Honorable Members, is the implication of decisions taken by a council. What will be the effect of my decision in council on the lives of the people outside? And implementation by officials. Yes. And that's where you need expertise. Then you succeed. Thank you very much. We're now going to Mangaung. Mangaung, which is actually a rural metro compared with what we just heard. I know the Free State for many, 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 many years. It's a rural province. Well, there's different perspectives, and it's a democratic country, and I can express myself on that. But, Mangaung, are you ready? Honorable members, order. We release Ekutweni. We're not going to keep you longer, that you can get your flight back to Durban. Or to King Chaka Airport, let me put it that way. Honorable Mayor, if you're ready, you may address us. We're giving you your 55 minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Order. Members, order.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much for your definition of Mangaung as a rural metro. Let me also welcome and thank the Honorable Members of the Committee for inviting us to come here and also accepting the input that we are given an opportunity to learn from each other. We could have lost if we presented before Ethiopia. With me, I do have a MMC for finance, MMC Mula Matiti Ojili, you can raise your hand, and also city manager, advocate Tankiso Mia, and the acting CFO, Ntate Rapudungwana, HOD engineering, HOD Mlondolozi, and Ntate Chomakai from the office of the city manager. I am Oli Matawana Mlamleli, the executive mayor of Mangaung Metro. I also wish to inform the committee that we have lost our long-serving CFO who served Mangaung for about 10 years and who resigned.
Sorry for interruption. Can someone close the door, please?
I was just explaining to members of the committee that we have lost his soul rest in peace. Honorable member, you have resigned. And then with me, we are with the acting CFO. This is his fourth month acting. So we are in the process of appointing CFO. We have advertised. We are now just about to go with the selection processes and appointment. May I hand over to the city manager?
Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Executive Mayor. Thanks to members. Chair, I will try and be quick because our presentation is a little bit long. We apologize. I think that's also affected the size of the document which we sent through, and then it was not easy. Yeah, our apologies for that, Chair. Chair, maybe quickly, in the beginning, just to deal with the issue of which Chair said it's very important, unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless expenditures. The presentation, and we have engaged with National Treasury, and Chair, we appreciate the relationship that we're having with National Treasury in terms of assisting the municipality. We've got various programs that we have embarked upon with them. The figures here, Chair, and the city is dealing with them, these are cumulative because for a number of years, these reports were never finalized and submitted to council. But we have since embarked under the leadership of MMC and the Executive Mayor, dealt with the matter, and I'm saying this figure is a cumulative figure because starting, I think, 2011-12, the report at one point was submitted to council, but council rejected it, and then we had to start the investigations afresh. So at the moment, all unauthorized expenditure we've completed from that period to today. All wasteful and fruitless expenditure, we have concluded all the investigations. The report will be submitted to MPEC and Council in the next coming month or so. So we have done that. The only outstanding now that we will be busy with was to handle the irregular expenditure. So I thought I needed to indicate that.
Fine. Please proceed.
Okay, Chair. We'll go to the presentation. That is what the presentation entails. Chair, this is how our city looks like. As Chair was rightly saying, we've got a very high component of rural areas, smallest in terms of population, very low density like Etekwene was elaborating on, but geographically we've got the biggest base, Chair. Our population is about 800. Chess, that was how we looked like in up to August 2016 before the elections. And then come the elections, our area was increased. We inherited four new towns, mainly rural and economically inactive. Now the city scope of operation was increased. We did engage National Treasury to say, can we receive resources to be able to deal with those areas. Four towns, which is Sofwan, Divelsop, Vepenar, Fanstad, and Sres. We did not get any allocation, and most of the budget that was for the former Mangaung had to be reallocated under the guidance of the Executive Mayor to say, these areas the conditions were not good there. If you went to Vetna, for instance, if you went to Divezop, your sewer network was non-existent. So most of the resources had to be rechanneled there. But that also increased our number of indigenous people at the city. Chair, we are going to quickly move into the funding and expenditure trend. As National Treasurer was saying, this is the picture that we also do not really like. And the effort and the guidance of the mayor, we have now started the process of moving away from this picture where there is over-reliance on the grants and law from the internal sources. So what has happened amongst the engagement, we, under the mayor's guidance, went to National Treasury and we are busy. We've just completed with them what we called a financial recovery plan so that we are able to change the picture in the city. As we can see, the pictures are there, and the percentage below the chair is what we want to improve. And the commitment of the city is let's increase more on own revenue despite the challenges that majority of our residents are unemployed, they are indigent. I can indicate that in Tavanchu Chair, we've got about 50 rural areas spread over a big area. To drive around and to provide services is a challenge. At one point, Chair, but that was suspended, the city wanted to embark on obtaining or going into the bonds, but the council has at that time felt that that must not be the approach. We will still be revisiting council on that matter. Chair, this slide 7 is about our budget performance in terms of the summary thereof to say where for the first column is about the amount that was adjusted, and then the other one is the actual expenditure in terms of the different funding sources that we have in the city. Own funds, we spend 92%, which makes it's 130 million. And then communications, these are the grants, National Electrification Program, Neighborhood, which is the biggest funding for the city. USDG, which is the biggest funding for the city. And then the public transport, we are one of those cities that are still in the process of finalizing IPTN chair. If I go to the next slide. Chair, this is the breakdown in terms of the expenditure per the different directorates or sections of the municipality. The first one being our entity, CENTLEC. We are mindful, and we've engaged with National Treasury about the consolidation of the accounts chair, which would leverage in terms of ensuring that the city does recover from the debtors. So in terms of the money that was allocated, they spent the full amount. As at June, this is as at June, the Office of the City Manager, the allocation that was there, Chair, we spent up to 42%. And I'll come back and explain, Chair. Our other directorate, corporate services, the expenditure was at 59%. Finance, which receives less of the or smallest of the capital expenditure, Chair, it was 21%. Social services, 36%. Planning, 64%. Human settlements and housing, this is where we're focusing on upgrading the informal settlements, Chair, 25%. Economic and rural, 51%. Roads and stormwater, 71%, sanitation, 71%, water, 90%, waste and fleet, 39%, and then strategic projects. The original budget was 15%, but then because This was the project is based in the CBD, and there was an issue of relocating the taxis from where they were operating. So it took longer for us to agree with them and finally to move them. But as we're speaking now, the money has already been spent.
Chair, if I were to... That's for the year 17-18?
Yes, Chair, the previous financial year. Chair, just to... Okay, let's go back. I just wanted to reflect there, especially on human settlement and housing, Chair. What had happened there was that the city received additional 100 million around March of this year, but all the monies have been committed. So, Chair, as we're speaking now, in terms of the books, the picture is different, but we are reporting what was the situation by the end of the financial year. Some of the figures have moved drastically, Chair. Others, we went to 100% in terms of the different expenditure for different directorates. Chair, this is just a pie chart to indicate the percentage cost for each or how each directorate is funded from the overall budget. What is the percentage for each one of them? Here is summary of expenditure per asset classification, Chair. To say under electricity, as we indicated, the percentage is still the same. Transport, IPTN, Chair, which we are rolling out as the city, is the figure is 41%. So this picture looks exactly the same as the previous one, Chair. And then this is the pie chart in terms of the percentage from the budget expenditure for each. Chair, the repairs and maintenance, and it was also reflected to say, for a couple of years, what the city was doing was the investment in bulk infrastructure, particularly water and sanitation. We have reached the stage where we are saying almost the city we are able to can deal with new developments, new influx of people in terms of provision of those services, because part of that program that the city was embarking on was the eradication of the buckets. So we had to make sure that our bulk infrastructure is able to sustain the, because although majority of our communities were on VIP instead of buckets, I think our buckets is about 1,400, and then we've got about 38, but we'll come to that details in terms of the VIPs. But we have since increased our Chair. For the current financial year, there's an increase of about 50 million on the repairs and maintenance budget, Chair. And then this is how we allocate for the different portfolios or directorates for repairs and maintenance, Chair. Chair, our IDP, these are the key priorities that the leadership has put forward. We've got 8 of them, which in essence, Chair, are aimed at ensuring there is good governance. One, Chair, because as you said, we are a very unique metro with high rural setting. The issue of poverty eradication becomes key. Also, the issue of rural and economic development and job creation becomes key factors in terms of what we must do. Financial sustainability of the city, as we've spoken, there are engagements with also National Treasury in terms of assistance and other sectors. Spatial development of the city, which is a challenge to say. How do we ensure we are a compact city? And we are able to render services in a sustainable manner, because our communities are spread in a vast area, far apart from each other, but now we are trying to compact and prevent what we call urban sprawl. Bucket eradication, although the buckets, we've got, as I said, about 1.4, the biggest program relates to VIP toilets, which we need to eradicate. Integrated
Sorry, sir.
Yeah.
Although Monakiri.
I'm not very sure as to whether we're expected to be in the House at 14 hours. If we are, I'm going to propose that we ask Mangauno to move a little bit faster.
Okay.
So that we still have some time to ask questions. Sure.
When we started, I indicated we have to be in the House at 14 hours, and it's a three-line whip, and we have to adjourn at 20 to 2 at the latest. If members recall what I said. So, sir, can you try and speed up?
Okay, sir.
You will have to address the matters raised by the National Treasury on your municipality as well, because that's where all the questions will go to, in that direction.
Okay.
I know my members.
Okay.
Yes, I know them.
Chair, maybe I should do that. Chair, there was... issue around IDP, which I thought I'll touch on, the processes. So what, in Mangaung, what the city has adopted is a methodology on planning, which we called ward-based planning. So what we normally do, we consult the communities extensively for the MTRAS period to say, these are the priorities that we agree on with the city, and then we then say, okay, this will be in the budget. Tell us how they must be, what is the... We also have a slide here to say the community priorities. Then we list those priorities for the MTRAS. So on an annual basis, we then go to the community to say, do you still confirm that these are your priorities, yes or no?
The crucial question is, do we have the funding for that priorities? That is what must be dovetailed.
Yes, sir. This is exactly what we do as a city. We avoid having a long wish list, which would then provoke the community if you don't deliver. To say, in terms of our resources, this is the X amount we have. Let's agree how this money must be spent over the MTRAS. Then we agree with the community. So every year we go and reconfirm so that we are still together with the community in terms of those priorities, Chair. On the issue of financial health, we agree, Chair. We are in a very tight situation, but we have proactively already started working with National Treasury. In the last council, a financial recovery plan, as I indicated, was approved by council, which would ensure that the city's finances become stable. But, Chair, maybe what we also...
Elaborate more on that.
The recovery plan is a detailed plan, Chair, in terms of the different sections of the municipality to say, what do we do, amongst others, to make sure that we reduce on over-commitment and over-expenditure. There must be a sound discipline on the finances of the city. No over-commitments. In the past, our colleagues, some of them, would over-commit, just spend. Yesterday we were talking, for instance, one of the instructions that we issued before the end of the financial year, because part of what was crippling the city, Chair, was the accruals, which were not managed. People hiding these invoices when they were supposed to properly declare them. And then come the new financial year, the management would only realize when the mayor, people are marching to her office to say, we have not been paid. And then we must look for the invoice. We discovered it was deliberately held back before the end of the financial. We engaged all the managers before the end of the financial assessment. Please let's bring forth all the documents, because they put too much pressure on the finances every financial year. Chair, the one thing that we are battling with is the issue of the government debt, Chair, which is big.
What is that figure?
1 billion, Chair.
What?
1 billion? Yes, it's a combination of services and the water. It's a cash 22, Chair. If you shut down the services, you are also punishing the community. So we find ourselves in a very tight situation. The last time we took a bold step, we did that. And even the Department of Labor came and said, open up, because those offices must operate. So that becomes a tough situation, Chair.
Chair, service delivery in terms of national treasury in decline, we don't fully agree with them. Yes, our plans are outdated, but what we had to start, as we say, the previous administration before us was investing on bulk infrastructure. We have now started to do house connections so that we can now recover that investment from what we, from the community, as I just said. We have now increased on the issue of maintenance. The one program was the Hari pipeline. I think the mayor will touch on it slightly before I step down, which we feel it's also a necessity because our city, in terms of water supply, we are gradually running into the tight situation. But what we have also agreed, Chair, in the current financial year, was to allocate more money for engineering services in the main, because our infrastructure, especially the underground water sewer, it's aging, it's giving problems. To say engineering, let's do a study on what they term for engineering terminology, condition assessment of our infrastructure. So based on that, it will then tell the city what is the correct intervention that we need to put in ensuring that our infrastructure and service delivery is up to date. We also, as the city also, Chair, took particularly for to ensure that we've got machinery and equipment to be able to render the services, taken a decision on what we call a lease financing for about 250. That will ensure that over time the city is able to replace old fleet or machinery so that we are able to can render our services efficiently. Chair, I'm now trying to run. Over. Okay, thank you, Chair. Chair, what happened when we assumed office, unfortunately, there was this misconception from the workers that because Mangaung was now a metro, they are owed a metro salary. We engaged extensively, Chair, with the workers to say, but for instance, they were saying councillors are overpaid. We tried to explain that the salaries of councillors are regulated. Salaries of top management is regulated. They didn't want to take that until we had a very unfortunate situation which led to the burning of our city hall, which was a national embarrassment to us. We had to, unfortunately, give in, and we gave workers 250 the Buffalo City had a similar arrangement, which they then said we needed to go into. So that had a big. Okay. That had a big dent on our repairs and maintenance budget, Chair, for the entire financial year. It had serious implications because 150 million of the capital had to go through that process, Chair. It's one chapter that we wish never happened in the city. Chair, but the other challenge that we are drastically addressing, National Treasury is fully aware about that, is the issue of overtime, Chair, which has become a culture, I think, across all municipalities. We had to be bold to say we put a stop, we reduced the hours because usually this is the culture. Workers would be dragging their feet during office hours and start so that they push the city into over, especially on the issue of water water and sanitation, because there will be leakages, also waste removal chair. So those are the big facts. But as a city, we have taken bold decisions. We are dealing with those matters. There are instances where there is clear-cut abuse, which we'll be dealing with, and then the culprits will be punished, because we'll take from the managers downwards necessary steps and actions against those people to eradicate that culture, chair, and to bring things into order.
Good morning, Kerry.
When we have certain communication from Amina,
okay. Do you want to ask questions, other members? To the municipality, to the metro, as the Minister of Finance introduced the expenditure ceiling, looking at what you are telling us now, you will have to take the same route in terms of the administration wasting money and let the money be directed to the service delivery issues of the people. Yes. I'm listening very carefully to you. Let us take the questions to be more productive. Honorable Isaac.
Chair, thank you for the opportunity for allowing me to go first. I wanted to just check through you, sir. If we had questions, would it be possible that we could get those questions replied in writing, or do we have to sit and take the replies now? I just want to check through you because of the time constraints and the fact that I'm a little under pressure, but I leave it in your hands, sir.
I noted, Honorable Shibangu.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also take this opportunity to say thank you to the Treasury, Mangaung and Etekwini, for their presentation. The reason why I didn't ask questions is because I've got interest in Free State, and I'm from Free State. I have hobnobbed with the mayor, and then my first question would be with regard to the water board. It was mentioned that the water board increased the tariff. The water board, according to my little knowledge, is the entity of the municipality. They must plan together. They must agree in terms. They must not come and complain that the water board has increased the tariffs without their knowledge. This affects the service delivery. With regard to the land, the tribal land, only Tabanchu is a tribal land that belongs to the tribes that are living there. And I think they're doing well with the province. They understand each other. The province is also paying the chief very well. I don't think there can be a problem that affects the land that belongs to that tribe. The city is having a lack of capacity with regard to administration. Do you have qualified officials in your municipality? If yes, why all this mess that you are facing today? South Africa is a water-scarce country. But Mangaung losses is at 34.8% with regard to water, 10.77% with regard to electricity. What remedy or mechanism do you have in place in order to curb this maladministration? Poor management of indigent register. If the city can't manage the indigent register,
It means you have a problem in collecting your revenue. How can you account on this? There is an interference in the administration duties due to congested budget in IDP processes. Is this done because of interest in the tender process? If not, why? Because the administration, according to MFMA, is the sole MM and his or her team's responsibility, not the responsibility of the politician. I'm about to finish, Chairperson. Mangaun doesn't have Metro Police, and there is youth crime compared to many cities. And yet you say is a rural metro. How do you deal with crime stop measures without Metro Police? Metro Police in itself is job creation. And then yet they say their unemployment is at 40.7%. There is also no city transport. How are you going to deal with an unemployment without proper planning? Then finally, the spillages. Spillages and potholes in the township of Bloemfontein, Mangaung, as we are visiting it next week. In particular, when and how are you going to remove the old infrastructure that we have? You said you have inherited from the past. But you must also bear in mind that in the past, there were no infrastructure. People were using buckets, toilets, as they are still there in Mangaung as I'm speaking today. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable members, I can see you are looking at your watches. Do you have engagements between 1 and 2? Who else? No, you must give me an indication because then they must give us written responses. You're fine. Honourable de Blanche, you are on with your question.
Okay, we heard in Treasury's presentation about a non-compliance chairperson with procurement outcomes. Then a very worrying one is service delivery targets not achieved. And that once again, chairperson, like usual, the supply chain management processes that not followed. And this one is also very worrying. Credit control. The credit control procedures apparently are not in place. That is what we heard. And there, Chairperson, I think this one they dealt with already. The question of overtime that's been depleted. And then lastly, Chairperson, service delivery is in decline. Worrying stuff. Overtime is depleted and yet, you know, it doesn't make sense. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thanks to the leadership of the municipality and of the National Treasury for their presentations. I've got a few questions. Yeah, the first one is around the turnaround time to fill vacancies in the municipality. You have just indicated here that the CFO has been acting for the past 4 months. And obviously when the previous one resigned, for sure he gave notice, I suppose, to say that in a month's time I'm going to resign. And the leadership of the municipality, including and especially at the level of the mayor, had an opportunity to then, you know, start the process of advertising and making sure that in the shortest possible time that vacancy is filled. And this is the same issue that the National Treasury also picked up earlier on to say that there is a challenge in terms of turnaround time to make sure that vacancies are filled, you know. I just want to understand what is the problem. Why can't we get this one right? And the metro, in terms of its budget, is depending in the main on grants. Earlier on, I think it was indicated that 85% of your budget is funded through grants. What are you telling us? Are you saying this metro is actually not sustainable? Was it a mistake to declare this Mangaung municipality as a metro? But also, out of interest, I just want to understand how many municipalities had to be disestablished so that they come and form part of the metro? And also, what became of the district of which Mangaung was part? Is it still there? Yeah, I just want to understand that part, you know. And there are reasons why I'm also asking these questions. They are moved elsewhere in the country to also classify some municipalities and elevate some of those to that level of the metro. So I'm just trying to make sure that whatever mistakes were committed, were made in Mangaung, are not repeated in these other places. No? So if I could get some answers to this. I think I had a question on the issue of overtime. I think someone, I think, already has raised the matter or it has been commented upon. But I just want to say that our expectation is that as the leadership of the municipality, we expect you to put your foot down, you know, to lead. If you have decided to be a leader, you can't expect to be loved by everyone. When workers march and they even commit criminal acts, you then yield, you know, and give them the, no. Then it means you are not leading. Because, like, for instance, I mean, they burned down the city hall. You have not even told us as to whether criminal charges were laid against those culprits. Are they still there? What happened? They came back again, demanded overtime, you know, again yielded. So I'm saying if you want to be leaders, no, you must lead. And there's no two way about it. Otherwise, you'll continue to have all these problems, no? You'll always complain and complain, you know? So you need to bring a stop to some of these things, put your foot down, and make sure that you give firm, effective leadership. Some of us have been there. I think Lebon Tate Magi at that side. We had to deploy him to National Treasury because, yes, of his skills, you know? So he's there at your disposal. Please use him. Yes. And the issue of audit outcomes, you got unqualified last time. Now you have regressed. You are at, you got qualified, you know. I did not hear you explain exactly why did you regress. Can you explain that? And the issue of key staff that is leaving, I just want to understand, do you do exit interviews? You are saying, I think that is what the National Treasury raised, that the municipality is having this challenge of losing staff, you know, like for sure the CFO and others. I just want to understand what could be the reasons. Do you do exit interviews so that you are able to understand and be able to make sure that whatever reasons, whatever challenge that are forcing this key personnel to leave are actually addressed. Thank you very much.
The word is being decisive. Must be decisive. That's how you also gain respect.
Honorable Modular Shipping, are there any questions from you?
No.
You are totally covered.
I'm mouth.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor. You and your team can reply.
Thank you so much. I think I'll start with the key issues of putting the food down. That is, I think, what is expected of us. And that is why, at the moment, it's a bit tense in the municipality because we are putting our foot down, especially with regard to this issue of overtime. And in that regard, we have made a presentation to LGCTA to say that we need to augment our personnel with regard to the learnerships and the internships in different aspects. For the repercussions with regard to the venue of the City Hall, we utilized our cameras to sit down and see exactly what happened. Let me make an example. We do have the President Brand. That is our national heritage street. All those that disturb that street, then they are all, most of them, they are out of work. They wrote letters to plead with the executive mayor. He just said no. So most of them, they've been dealt with. I think, Honorable Chair, the Naledi municipality, you said, Honorable Member, how did we get a metro? Remember that we had Motheo, and Motheo had to be integrated into to make Mangaung Metro. But these other two municipalities that we have just inherited, they were not part. Now, after the latest demarcation, we had to inherit Naledi. Naledi is from the former Harib, the small municipality which is not even viable, which has three towns, Diversdorp, Diepenaar, and Van Stanislaus, as a city manager have already alluded to that. I then, as the MEC for COCTA, we wanted to support municipalities to get more budget in this regard. So the other town that we inherited is your small Sulpan from Masilonyana municipality. So we have those four towns that are inherited, but now there is no motel. It's Mangaung with this, with no budget, and so forth. I think what I want to allude to again is this unfunded mandate. Unfunded mandate is really crippling us. We do have this Harib pipeline. Honorable Member will remember, we started with that as early as 2004, and the price tag then, it was about $2 billion. It has been feasibility study by Mangaung, competing with the Department of Water Affairs, and then at the end of the day, National Treasury came in. But Honorable Members, let me tell you, even up to date, there is still no light that other side of the tunnel. And this was confirmed last week when we were visited by two portfolio committees of appropriations as well as water and sanitation. We agreed that the Department of Water and Sanitation will implement the project with a price tag now of $8 billion. Let me tell you, Honorable Chair, they confirmed the department that they don't have money. And we have seven land parcels that we need to develop. We've already leveraged the infrastructure, then there'll be no water. What we have decided to do is to say, we better go triple P, because we can't have those seven land parcels, including the airport node, without water. When the Department of Water Affairs confirmed to the chairpersons of those two committees that there is just no money, and yet we have 57,000 VIPs that we have to eradicate. There is 57,000. That is only VIPs. We also bucket pit latrines and all that. So we also learned from KZN that we better go triple P. We have to go and do it, because the department told us in the presence of two committees that they don't have money. And Bluewater, what they said they are looking at implementing at 2035. And then the development is here. We need to sweat the infrastructure that we have invested in. That is what I wanted to allude to. The credit control management plan, as well as the financial recovery, it was a war for the executive mayor to look and make introspection. before National Treasury can come in. I did their own introspection and called National Treasury, called Provincial Government of COCTA, called the Office of the Premier, as well as Provincial Treasury to say, here is it, I did not want to appoint any consultant. Those officials, they sat down 5 days, 8 to 8 in the evening, and at the end of the day, they produced the document. Because I believed that if I make introspection, others will understand as I'm pulling towards the document. But today when the Minister of COCTA visited the province, I was able to produce the document, and all political parties, without exception, they all agreed that we are all going to work together. We as the ruling party must just open up and make sure that together we implement that. And the audit action plan is also in place. And what I want to allude to is together, even the performance agreement. Performance agreements are going to be informed by the audit plan, the recovery plan. Even these issues that are now raised by National Treasury, we need to put them in so as to make sure that we pin everybody down to make sure that we succeed and increase service delivery. With the decrease in service delivery, I saw the city manager. We are inheriting a situation where the former council planned to borrow, to have a bond of 5 billion. And in relation to that, they had planned, agreed projects. But when the bond was not approved, they kept the project and there was no money. So we are still struggling with that. That is one other thing that cost us, because we need now to ensure that with the little that we have, we complete this budget. Lastly, Chair, with regard to that.
You're borrowing, you must pay
back. Absolutely. Yes. And when we arrived, we found that they over-budgeted. They overspent in this way. We found that there were 10 infrastructure contractors for a budget eradication, which were there and not being paid. So we had to borrow 500 million to make sure that we use half of it to pay them and half of it at least to increase our revenue by installing the prepaid meters. But we are fortunate that we are installing both prepaid meters for water and electricity. So that is the legacy that we are really dealing with. But as city manager is saying, there are changes in that regard.
Now, members, we are always informed by SALGA. We did the following workshops. We did this and we did that, and now this municipality inherited. Yes. Now, the point is, then we must correct it and do things differently. Differently. And the same to Treasury. When you conduct training sessions, you must assess before those people leave your workshop, did they understand what we trained them on? Do they understand? Give them an assignment. Before you go home tonight, you do this assignment, you must pass. Because I must go back to my office, I must implement what I was trained on. Otherwise, you'll end up in a mess. Do things differently.
I'll try to run quickly through other questions. Bloomwater is a entity of Department of Water and Sanitation nationally. It's not our entity. Our entity is Centlec. Yeah, okay. Chair, we don't really have problems. We're working very well with the traditional authority in our municipality. They are also part of council.
Okay.
Yeah, so the relations, they used to be rough, but they are okay now. So, Chair, the issue of qualification is raised. I don't know if I will be defending myself. I would say Mangaung relatively does have qualified senior managers. We were discussing also this matter with the executive mayor yesterday or last night to say the issue that we need to resolve and go ahead on as a city is the attitude of people below that top layer of management towards service delivery. So we'll be doing that. The water losses chair, I think HOD would touch on that, but I did indicate that we'll be conducting, or and we've set money aside, what we call condition assessment survey of our infrastructure to deal with the issue of water management. But we've also, as the city, took a deliberate decision to say, now we need to focus more on the, most of our budget must go to water demand section other than other units within the city. Yes, we are in a process of establishing the Metro Police Chair, but relatively, we are a comparatively crime in the city. It's not that bad. It's under control. We've got regular, we hold regular, campaigns jointly with SAPS and other law enforcement agencies where we focus on a variety of issues just to try and kick out criminals from our city. The issue of spillages and potholes, I think it's an ongoing program. As you said, Chair, yeah, we do allocate money for it. We've tried to increase by 50 million our repairs and maintenance. It was compromised in the previous financial year where there was this issue of the metro salary, if you like, which we had to settle for, that the workers demanded. So it compromised part of our repairs and maintenance budget because that's where we took the money from to pay. But also, Chair, now you also touching on the issue of turnaround of staff. Once your operational budget decreased, it means your salary budget percentage now, you must be careful. So we had to strike a balance there to say, to comply, you can't exceed a certain percentage, which is 32. So we had to slow down on new appointments. That can happen now because our operational budget has now increased. Then we can be able to start a process of appointing new staff. The executive may have spoken. The issue of the CFO is ongoing. I mean, there are different compliance processes in relation to what you must do with regard to that. I think I've also spoken. The targets, Chair, and we have corrected this problem now. During that financial year, what had happened, the budget was adjusted downwards. And what happened, we did not then went to the SDVIP to deal with those targets where the money was removed to remove them from the plan. They remained, and correctly when Treasury was assessing, they were not performed. But we removed money from that. Credit control is ongoing. It also goes with cost containment measures that the city must implement. I don't think it was a wrong decision to declare Mangaung Metro, but some of the decisions that were taken outside the municipality has led us to a difficult situation. We've just spoken of the four towns that came in with no resources. We can also state, Chair, when the Motheo was established, Mangaung inherited the staff of the former district, but the resources were taken to the other municipalities which were part of the district. Some of the resources went to Manzoba, other resources went to Naledi. We only inherited the personnel of that former district. I think I've spoken about the issue of overtime. The City Hall, plus what the mayor said internally, there were also criminal cases that are ongoing with SAPS. At the level of SAPS. Why we regressed, Chair, I think when colleagues were presenting the issue of indigent register, okay, there are still challenges, but it was not I think they were talking of generally what are the issues in Nasa. The two issues that caused our qualification was, the water meters of the city. And unfortunately, this is also a matter that dates years back. And now when, in terms of the accuracy of the what is below the surface, the city could not produce the documents. And the AG had problems with some of the documents that was produced to prove what meters are underneath. We have now agreed with AG in terms of the way forward to deal with that aspect, because it was then between the city choosing for us to say this is a 5 millimeter diameter pipe. Must we dig? And what are the costs? And then there were methodologies that were engaged upon. So we've agreed with AG in terms of what must be done, because those are the 2 meters. And then the second one was our WIP in terms of reporting of the project. We are dealing with that that issue. So those were the 2 key issues, Chair, that led to the city's regress. And unfortunately, it's historic matters in terms of those meters. Resignations, yes, Chair, the exit interviews are conducted in terms of as and when people resign, to make sure that we can draw lessons from what could have led to that resignation. Thank you, Chair. I think, I don't know if Majoro will direct other issues.
Chair, I think in conclusion, I need to emphasize that in the establishment of the Metropolis, we have submitted our application. Next week, we'll be getting response, which is already confirmed response from the National Commissioner, Provincial Commissioner, and the MMC. I wish also to inform the committee that I, as the executive mayor, I tabled a report to the council about the status of the board of St. Lake. Just before they request, in fact, they wanted to call the board meeting, the AGM, without consulting with the mother and mother board, which is Mangaung. Then I had to stop them to say, it doesn't work that way. Then I went back to say, give me your report from 2014 to date. And what I discovered, they've never had their AGM from 2014. That's what I tabled in council. And secondly, I also realized that they were never ever assessed their performance. And thirdly, I looked at the different terms of the members of the board. They moved from 3 years, others 5 years, the chairperson 9 years, and others 11 years. With all that, I tabled the report in council, and council took a resolution to disband the board. So the board is disbanded as of now. We are given 6 months to make sure that we appoint the new board. I wanted to report it to the committee.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, and get expertise on that board. That is the route to take. Honorable members, 1 billion rand is owed by provincial departments to this metro. 1 billion rand. There's a structure of the provincial treasury in each province, which I think meet on a quarterly basis, if I'm correct, chaired by a very senior official in the treasury of the province, calling the municipal managers and CFOs to meetings on this matter done in my province, Northern Cape, to zoom into these monies that are owed to municipalities. So I'm just giving you the background what's happening in Northern Cape. I don't know what is the procedure in the Free State. But that is a route to take. Treasury will have to zoom into this as well. Yes, it's part of your oversight role.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to highlight that. I think, Chairperson, it is very, very much unfair. I'm also sitting in the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Forum, where I raised this issue even when I was still the MEC and the Chairperson of COC. But there is no action. So what we did, we switched off both water and electricity, even in the office of provincial treasurer and education, including the office of the premier. Wow, it was bad. It was as if we did something very wrong. We were not even protected by anybody. We even received calls even from national departments, and I suspect even treasurers. But what we have done, it was correct. They sat down and they paid at least an amount and committed. So I think that is what we have done. But the committees, both in here in Parliament, National Assembly, everywhere, we want to be assisted. Because if there is no movement, because we also switched off a national, a provincial treasurer, and the MEC called me to reprimand me. I said that you must first pay us, then you start to talk. So that is the situation. We are pleading for support.
We will engage with the Minister of Finance and the Minister for COPCA. Next week, the NCOP will be in the Free State, deployed in Mangaung, but also in the Gariep district municipality area. So we're going to report back. Honourable Members, Section 154 of the Constitution must be implemented. National and provincial departments must assist municipalities. There are certain actions taken, but it is the monitoring of those actions taken. The Auditor General is being assisted when we in Parliament adopted and passed the Public Audit Amendment Bill. That will also assist councils, like you want to do the right thing in terms of irregular, wasteful, fruitless expenditure. Honourable Members, just one thing. Page 11 of the National Treasury presentation. National Treasury issued a regulation for the establishment of a financial misconduct board to deal with cases of transgressing the MFMA. Did your district, Metro, establish such a board?
Not as far as I remember, even when I arrived, Honorable Chair. But that will, it's exciting. We'll have to do that. We'll do that. And I was saying, Chairperson, I was saying to National Treasurer, why are they not coming to present to the mayoral committee, to come and present to the mayoral committee, because they end up contacting only officials. Then they don't elevate the issues to us. So from now, I'll make sure that they come even to us so that we know exactly what is to be done, not only at this level.
Now, here's an excellent opportunity. You are here as a leadership. There's the Treasury. Take your diaries and set the date and sort it out. Honorable Shabangu.
The only question that was what I said is that of my speech in Bloemfontein. The only question that was not adhered to was that of my seat in Bloemfontein. Are they going to establish my seat because it's going to help them? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. What we call it IPTN, Integrated Public Transport Network, and we are really advancing in that regard. Dr. Putungani here, he was heading that. I think he must just elaborate, just to give the committee about the primary route, the second, the trunk route. But honorable members, the public participation, I think, is very important. Because I was challenged by members of the committee to say, here is now the executive mayor decorating the paved road to make it red, not realizing that those are the specifics of IPTN. But I think that just in brief summary that we are there, those that we have completed, it is here in the report. It is here in the report, Honorable Members, it will show you where we are, which parts are completed, the second phase, the third phase, and we are now zooming into Tabancho and Butabe.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members, Executive Mayor. Indeed, we are working together with the Department of Transport to implement the Integrated Public Transport Network. We started 2014. We have a number of phases that we are implementing. We've got phase one, which is in the township.
which we are envisaging to go live in 2020. So we've got a very good working relationship with the taxi associations and the bus companies and operators there. We have meetings on monthly basis, and the taxi associations are represented by three associations working in our area, the GBTA, Telstra, and BATA. So we've got a very good working relationship. And we have actually constructed some infrastructure. We have actually now busy then implementing the main busways for this financial year, and also then we'll be constructing the bus depot. So the infrastructure then is getting speed, and then we are indeed then implementing the, and the bus station as well will be constructed. So we're implementing.
Thank you. Are you done?
We are done. Thank you very much.
We can see you are passionate about your plan. You've got the plan. It's not that you've got nothing. And next week when the NCOP is in the Free State, there's another opportunity to put your issues on the table. Thank you for your presentation. Thank you for the National Treasury for your presentation. On the members, the minutes will stand over because we are not correcting. This meeting is adjourned, and we came to the closure of the meeting. Thank you.